student moans over student loans.
The maximum interest rate that you will pay from next September to the August next year will be 6%.
The Navy lark continues as HMS Dragon is now had to be tied up awaiting repairs. But remember, Defence Secretary John Healey couldn't even remember how many ships are in the fleet. How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers.
And finally, the plug is pulled at the Wireless Festival for Kanye West. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the US and Iran have agreed a two-week ceasefire to allow for further talks to end the war. President Trump announced the truce just 90 minutes before last night's deadline for reopening the Strait of Hormuz. As part of the deal, Iran will coordinate the temporary reopening of the waterway for shipping traffic. Editor-in-chief at Foreign Policy, Ravi Agrawal, says initial details don't appear to mention Tehran's nuclear capabilities.
Part of the reading could be that President Trump was very desperate to end hostilities and therefore to allow oil prices to get back to a reasonable level, which will please much of the rest of the world for sure, that this is not the outcome they set out for.
Global oil prices fell after President Trump's announcement of a pause in fighting. Brent crude is currently trading at around $93 a barrel, well under its initial spike of $100. But financial analyst Danny Hewson has told LBC prices remain above pre-war levels.
Significant falls, though of course, remember back in December we were talking about $60 a barrel. I think anyone listening, the first thing they're going to be thinking is, right, okay, this is good. If the price of oil has come down, does that mean the price that the pump is going to come down? And I would suggest, of course, that because there's so much uncertainty, the answer is probably not for a while.
Both Iran and the US have been invited to peace talks in Pakistan, which has been a key mediator in the conflict. Israel has backed the ceasefire but insists it doesn't cover its war with Hezbollah in Lebanon. That directly contradicts statements made by Iran and Pakistan overnight. In other news, Bill Gates is to give evidence to the US Congressional Committee looking into the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The Microsoft co-founder is the latest high-profile figure to agree to testify before the House Oversight Committee. Gates has not been accused of misconduct, and his recent inclusion in the Epstein files does not imply any criminal activity. A British-American woman is due to be sentenced in Los Angeles later in connection with the death of Matthew Perry. Jasveen Sanger faces up to 65 years in prison after admitting supplying the drugs that killed the Friends actor. Perry died of an overdose in 2023. And resident doctors in England are resuming their strike action. Members of the British Medical Association are walking out for 6 days in their long-running dispute over pay and jobs. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,348. It closed down 87 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain for the northwest. A very warm day for England and Wales. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Compare the Market. Take it away, Sergey.
I need a Nero. I'm holding out for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong and it's gotta taste good and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only, two codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Wednesday, April the 8th, with so-called human chains around bridges and power stations in Iran. It was back from the brink for 2 weeks, a fortnight's ceasefire. But what needs to be done during those 2 weeks? Where exactly does it leave the United States? Where does it leave, of course, the supplies of oil, as the rest was referenced in that LBC bulletin in just a moment or two ago. We'll look at that in more detail. Back here in the UK, at last, the plug is pulled on Kanye West. It's a no to Ye at the Wireless Festival. Health Secretary Wes Streeting told me yesterday
and as far as I can see, has done little to earn the forgiveness of Jewish people. It's not for me to forgive, I'm not Jewish, and I think forgiveness has to be earned. You have to repent and redeem yourself through action, not just words.
Traveller woe in the stockbroker belt of Sundridge in Kent.
There's anger in the Kent countryside after a traveller site appeared over the bank holiday weekend, triggering a standoff between locals, police and the new arrivals. I'm LBC's George Ike in Sundridge.
Back to events in the Middle East. The Dragon that failed to roar, HMS Dragon, when it finally got there, is now tied up among technical issues that need to be addressed. Another Navy lark, and how embarrassing is that? Plus...
It's me.
There she is, Tay-Tay, Taylor Swift. Now a Trump backer offers $50 billion to buy the Universal Music Group. That's in our World of Business report later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
You're listening to LBC, 5 minutes after seven, and news breaking at this time. It has just been reported that Keir Starmer will travel to the Gulf today to meet with Gulf partners and discuss diplomatic efforts to support and uphold the ceasefire in order to bring about a lasting resolution to the conflict and protect the UK and global economy from further threats. There's quite a lengthy statement. Let me try and sub this down a little bit. Sir Keir says, quotes, I welcome the ceasefire agreement reached overnight, which will bring a moment of relief to the region and the world. Together with our partners, we must do all we can to support and sustain this ceasefire, turn it into a lasting agreement, and reopen the Strait of Hormuz, close quotes. The Prime Minister's travel follows the UK convened meeting last week of more than 40 countries to begin work on a viable plan to reopen the Strait. OK. Here's how it all began. This is how we got to where we are. In February, President Trump announcing the start of this military action in Iran.
A short time ago, the United States military began major combat operations in Iran. Our objective is to defend the American people by eliminating imminent threats from the Iranian regime, a vicious group of very hard, terrible people. Its menacing activities directly endanger the United States, our troops, our bases overseas, and our allies throughout the world.
As it enters its sixth week, here's President Trump earlier this week.
We have a plan because of the power of our military, where every bridge in Iran will be decimated, where every power plant in Iran will be out of business, burning, exploding, and never to be used again. I mean, complete demolition. And it'll happen over a period of 4 hours if we wanted to. We don't want that to happen. We may even get involved with helping them rebuild their nation.
The world watched, waited, and prayed possibly to a number of gods, and this is what happened.
We're just getting some breaking news here about the war. The president has just issued a Truth Social from the White House, and it seems like a deal is in the making.
This is an NBC News special report.
And good evening. We are coming on the air with some breaking news. Just moments ago, the president of the United States announced a two-week ceasefire with Iran.
This is CNN breaking news.
President Trump seconds ago taking to Truth Social to say that he is talking to Pakistani officials. And based on that conversation, he will agree to stop bombing for 2 weeks. He also says that Iran has agreed to open the Strait of Hormuz.
You heard Fox News, NBC News and CNN. Political reaction to Sir Keir's visit from former Foreign Secretary Sir James Cleverly in a moment. But first, let's turn to Andrew Neil, journalist, broadcaster, columnist for the Daily Mail, who had a very punchy piece in the weekends, Easter weekend's Daily Mail, talking about the reality of this conflict. Andrew, good to have you on. And you wrote very convincingly that actually Tehran, Iran, is emerging as the victor day by day because of its geographical location. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning to you. And that's even more true now that we've seen that President Trump has blinked. And it's not clear what he's achieved with this war so far. Let's just go through it. The Iranian regime survives. That's still there. It's now more hardline than ever. There's not been regime change in the right direction. Iran still has the enriched uranium. It's now going to get fresh revenues to build its missile arsenals and drones. How? Because it now has something it didn't have before the war started, control of the Strait of Hormuz, where it's already charging unfriendly nations $1 million a ship to get their stuff through. And on top of all that, The global economy is going to be set back for the rest of the year, even if permanent peace was to break out now. It's hardly a result of victory.
What needs to be done over the next 14 days to try and move towards some kind of resolution, Andrew?
Well, what needs to be done? I mean, look, there are no good outcomes. There are no good options for the United States in this at all. And if this is the start of a process of ending the assault on Iran, then in some ways it's the least worst option. But it's not a good option. And you can see that. Let me just be clear. If your listeners want to understand where we are, they ought to read the 10-point Iranian peace plan. They've issued 10 points, and President Trump, and I quote him, has said, this is, quote, a workable basis on which to negotiate. Well, let me just give you some of the points. The U.S. must give a permanent guarantee of non-aggression ever against Iran. It must agree to Iran's control over the state of Hormuz, that Iran can continue to enrich uranium, that all sanctions are taken off Iran, that America pays reparations for Iran for this attack. So if that's the basis for negotiation, you can see the direction the president is going in. We will get out of this in the end. This ceasefire is popular in the United States, where the people never wanted this war in the first place. There are elections coming up. And if this is the direction of travel, then fine, let's end it. It's a chaotic shambles. Iran will emerge stronger than ever. Our allies in the Gulf will be weaker than ever, but it's going nowhere. The alternatives are even worse. That's the situation we're in now.
Finally, a word on the UK. It's been announced this morning that Sir Keir Starmer is flying down to the Gulf today, referring again to your piece on the Easter weekend. Chamberlain has gone down in history as the architect of appeasement. Your view on Sir Keir and what he might or might not achieve later today or over the next day or two?
He won't achieve anything. It's irrelevant. He's going because he thinks he's spearheading some kind of plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. First of all, we don't have a navy that can play any part in reopening the Strait of Hormuz. You've already given the headline about HMS Dragon is now already out of operation in the Eastern Mediterranean. And Iran has made it clear. It now thinks it is in charge of the Strait of Hormuz. And breaking news, it is in charge of the Strait of Hormuz. And there's nothing Keir Starmer can do to change that. He is a total irrelevance in this conflict.
Andrew, thanks as ever for your input. Andrew Neil, journalist, businessman, broadcaster, columnist for the Daily Mail, 12 after 7. Listening to that, Sir James Cleverly. Of course, is a senior Conservative. He's a shadow housing secretary. It wasn't that long ago. Of course, he was foreign secretary. So, the Prime Minister going down to the Gulf, what does he need to do? What would the start of success look like to you? Sir James, morning.
Nick, I've just listened to Andrew Neil, who is a very experienced commentator. And the sad truth, and it is sad, as a former foreign secretary, the sad truth is that Andrew is absolutely right. Keir Starmer has got no authority. At the start of this conflict, he was neither supportive of America nor was he critical of the president. He was caught between the two. He, throughout this, has demonstrated a leaden-footedness. He has moved slowly at the last possible minute. He didn't prepare properly for defence of our
nation.
He's
in the Gulf today, Sir James.
Good. Day late and a dollar short. So after a ceasefire has been announced, after we've had weeks of criticism, and I've received this from my friends and contacts in the Gulf about that, you know, they feel that we weren't defending our own interests in their country. Keir Starmer has played this badly from the start, and this attempt to retrofit some kind of credibility by rushing off to the Gulf after a ceasefire has been announced is, as I say, far, far too little, far too late.
There's been a lot of condemnation of where your colleague, where your party leader, Kemi Badenoch, has been, with suggestions that she was initially fully supportive of military action and wanted to get involved, and that is a claim that's made by Labour. What do you see as the reality of Mrs. Badenoch's position?
Well, look, if Labour have to lie about Kemi in order to land some kind of criticism. I think that's more telling of Labour than it is of Kemi. Kemi was completely clear, and her position has been unambiguous on this. She was never advocating Britain get directly involved in this conflict. What she said was that blocking America from using their military equipment from based in British bases was not going to improve relations with the United States of America and have no credible impact on the war. That is exactly how it has played out. Keir Starmer has been the one that's changed his position, first not allowing, then criticising, now rushing off to the Gulf. He's flip-flopped, as he always does, U-turns all over the place. The point is that Keir Starmer's indecision has led us to the worst of all outcomes. Dragged into this conflict, criticised by our allies, and not just the United States of America, including countries in the Gulf. We've now got Cyprus putting a question mark over the maintenance of the base at Akrotiri because they feel that we failed to defend it properly. This is all down to Keir Starmer, and the sad truth is he is not up to the job.
Last minute or so together, I'm sure you won't for a moment question the commitment of the Royal Naval personnel, but HMS Dragon is tied up now, awaiting repairs. Sir James.
Well, the Defence Investment Plan, which is the government's document for how our military is actually funded, with things like equipment commitments, maintenance commitments, that has only just come out, months and months and months late. Our armed forces have been held back by indecision, once again, by Keir Starmer and the government. Look, I have plenty of friends in the military, Nick. You know this.
Yeah, you're ex-military,
They do a fantastic job. But over the last couple of years, they've had their hands tied behind their backs because of political indecision. And the British Armed Forces and the wider defence industry just don't know where they stand because the government, held back by the Treasury, refused to make the investment that was needed, which is why we're calling for at least 3% of defence spent on, 3% of GDP spent on defence immediately.
Lastly, and if you don't know anything about this, but I will ask you a story running today, public sector staff, including town hall officials, would be banned from working a four-day week on full pay by a future Conservative government, the Tories will say today. If you don't know anything about it, I won't push you, but do you have anything on that?
No, this is something that I've been working on. We see now in South Cambridgeshire District Council, Lib Dem-run council, they're going to basically give council workers something which no one in the private sector has the luxury of, which is a four-day week on 5 days' worth of pay. And at a time when people are working really, really hard, struggling to pay their bills, prices going up, life getting harder because of the decisions made by Rachel Reeves and the Treasury, to have a council rub their noses in it by saying, well, our workers are basically going to get a 3 days' holiday, completely unacceptable.
Grateful for your time, Sir James Cleverly, former Foreign Secretary, now Shadow Housing Secretary, senior Conservative MP. Will take your views on where this goes now over the next 2 weeks. Then coming right back home, justifiable student moans over student loans. President of the National Union of Students, Amira Campbell, told LBC.
This is a massive win for a lot of graduates. At a point in time where we saw student debts growing at ridiculous levels and at ridiculous rates.
7:17, LBC News headlines now, though. Dominic Ellis.
The US and Iran have agreed a two-week ceasefire to allow for further talks to end the war. As part of the deal, Iran will coordinate the temporary reopening of the Strait of Hormuz shipping lane for traffic. Israel has backed the ceasefire but insists it doesn't cover its war with Hezbollah in Lebanon, a direct contradiction to a statement made by mediator Pakistan. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a warm day, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the A13 westbound, heading towards the M25 junction. A car's broken down and it's slow all the way back to the Lakeside turnoff. In Finsbury Park, the Seven Sisters Road is partially blocked southbound. Some emergency works are having to take place just before the Blackstock Road. So that means all the buses that usually go that way are on diversion. On the train, still no Avanti West Coast and London Northwestern services to and from Euston from Milton Keynes. That's because of the ongoing works to the West Coast main lines. Also, severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Hayes and Harlington and Reading because of some emergency works, which also means that Great Western Railway are running a reduced service from Paddington to Reading.
This is LBC.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the content production industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Daisy, a technical content production student in year 12.
We've already learned how to create content and work with employers in the media industry. I love working in the studio, making my own podcast, and can't wait to start my 45-day work placement next term.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
21 minutes after 7. Quick look at the headlines, although virtually all the newspapers were not able to run the events overnight. The Daily Mail has picked up with it. Trump steps back from the brink at 11th hour. The others are all going with the line that the world waits and outrage and fear as their suggestion that they would wipe out civilization in Iran. Clever front page, therefore, for the Daily Mirror, which combines the two stories. A glimpse of Earth from the Orion spacecraft after a journey that represents the best of humanity. But as the Mirror front page says, this is, by the way, this isn't their headline, but our precious home continues to be torn apart by the worst of it. A maniac in the White House threatens to obliterate a whole civilization. And there is one of those extraordinary pictures from the Orion spacecraft. The world holds its breath, and a picture from the sort of back, is it the side, other side of the moon, I think is the expression. So clever front page for the Daily Mirror there. One of those stories, front page, here we go. The Sun, no can do, as in Kanye West, as in now Ye, banned from entering Britain. There's a bit of a political backlash there with, intriguingly, among others, Nigel Farage saying he's not sure that that is the right decision. We will return to that story. One thing is for certain, though. The organisation that was behind the Wireless Festival rocking now, presumably it will lose millions of pounds. But never mind the credibility, that is completely shattered as opposed to the financial loss. LBC, a big day for world peace. Trump claims victory for the US. Well, unfortunately, as I said yesterday, it used to be in these issues, didn't it, that if you heard something from the United States side of it, or you heard something from the UK, that you probably thought it was genuine. I don't know that you can attribute that to the White House, sadly, anymore. You're never quite sure what's going to come out of there. And as for the foul language he used over the Easter weekend, particularly as I think it was on Easter Sunday, that he started hurling around the F word and the B word and everything else. I mean, credibility, a bit like the Wireless Festival, is in the gutter, isn't it? All right, we'll take your views on that. But let's come to a domestic story. And as I've said all along, very justifiable moans from students about students' loans. Well, the government now have stepped in, and interest will be capped. Skills Minister Jackie, now Baroness Smith, insisting yesterday that this interest rate cap will protect graduates.
The maximum interest rate that you will pay from next September to the August next year will be 6%. That's a temporary way of alleviating the potential stress on graduates of not knowing what the impact of the war in the Middle East will be on the interest rate that they have to pay.
Let's bring in someone then for whom this is all too personal, a case study or a case history. George Holmes was an economics student at the University of Sheffield till a couple of years ago. He took out a Plan 2 loan and joins me now. Can I call you George, or do you prefer Mr. Holmes? Good morning to you, sir.
Yeah, morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm good. Can I call you George? Is that all right?
Yeah, George is fine, thank you.
George, do you mind walking my listeners through when it was, the amount of money you took out, and where you find yourselves now? And as you go, I'll make a note as well. Off you go, George.
Yeah, absolutely. So I studied economics at Sheffield 2016 to 2019.
Yeah.
I borrowed three lots of the £9,000. I didn't take a maintenance loan, so I was very fortunate in that position.
Yeah.
So I graduated with £27,000 worth of debt, but actually it was accruing interest at RPI plus 3% from my very first lecture. So when I actually graduated, it was about £30,500 in 2019. Yeah. And then ever since then, Nick, I've been working at a large aerospace company for 6 years. I've been paying it back and I still owe exactly the same £30,500 despite paying back around £200 a month at the moment.
That's
because of this high interest rate, which is RPI plus 3%, which, as you just mentioned there, is now being capped at 6%.
So all you've done effectively is to pay off the interest each year.
Exactly, yeah. And many people aren't doing that. The average debt is about £50,000, so many people aren't even keeping on top of the interest, which is why we see it spiralling.
Yeah, well, there's someone in my life, my stepdaughter. I think she's about 60 or 70 grand. This is shocking. What does it? Yesterday's news. What does it mean for you, George?
Yeah, so I think it's really positive that they're looking at the interest rate, and I give them credit for that. It's been as high as 8% in 2024, August, when inflation last spiked. So it's been really, really high. I think still 6% is too high, if I'm completely honest. I think it needs to come down further than that. 6% is more than you would pay on a mortgage if you went to buy a car, anything like that. We personally think it should be around CPI. You know, this is a educational loan to train out doctors and nurses. It shouldn't be 6%. It shouldn't be as high as 8%. And it shouldn't be that while you're studying. It's ridiculous that it's so high.
Well, there's an interesting dichotomy or irony here, isn't it? You mentioned CPI, and that is what the government quotes in its negotiations with the resident doctors, and they quote the importance of CPI. When it comes to you guys and women, they quote RPI, which is the higher of the two, plus 3%. So they like the CPI for the doctors and the RPIs for you folk.
Yeah, and the extra 3% is particularly egregious. There was an Opposition Day debate a few weeks ago to get it down to RPI, but that was unfortunately defeated. At this point, having been paying RPI plus 3% for around the last 5 years and whilst I was studying, I would take RPI or CPI, Nick. But there's a broader point in that the interest rate, looking at it, is great and they should definitely do that. It doesn't help anyone in the short term with the repayment threshold now being frozen until 2030. And I'm happy to explain that if you'd like me to.
Please, yeah, do if you would, yeah.
Yeah, so you pay, I think it's over £29,500. You pay 9% of your earnings over that.
Goodness.
That threshold is supposed to increase with average earnings. However, it's been repeatedly frozen. So George Osborne first did it, and then Rachel Reeves did it in this budget until 2030. So that's basically creating a second round of fiscal drag for graduates. And so changing the interest rate might help them in year 25, year 30 of their loan. It doesn't do anything at the moment to help them save for a pension, start a family, save for a deposit and all of that kind of thing. So they've been fiscally dragged twice at this budget until 2030. So they need to also look at the repayment threshold, not just the interest rate. And actually, the interest rate isn't relevant for the lowest earners.
Last minute or so together. George, you're obviously a bright bloke. You went to Sheffield University. Knowing what you know now, would you have done your university tuition? Would you have the job you have in engineering without your degree?
Yeah, so, you know, I've worked at a very good company since I graduated. Very lucky for that. I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't gone to university. My parents didn't go to university, so I'm glad that I went. The interest rate and the paying it back is really, really difficult. I personally would still have gone, but it's not necessarily the right decision for everyone. But I don't want to discourage young people from going to university. I had an incredible 3 years. You know, it's a fantastic privilege and it is paying dividends for me. But paying RPI plus 3% on that loan for the next 30 years... potentially now cap 6% is very, very difficult.
Final question. Wednesday or Sheffield? Wednesday or United, sorry.
Wednesday, yeah, Wednesday. Yeah.
Well, you've had a hell of a season then, haven't you?
I'm not really a football fan, but yeah, we had some good fun up there.
You went up there as a student. All right. Listen, good luck with your work. Thanks for going through all the details. Appreciate it, George. George Holmes, former economics student at the University of Sheffield. That's a plan to learn. Very grateful to him for being so candid with his figures. Now, fortunately, landed a job in engineering. Nigel's in Mayfield. Let's talk about a domestic story. Student loans. This is good news for the students, isn't it, Nigel? Morning.
Well, it's good. Good morning to you. I suppose it is good news if you're a student, but I think I was saying to your lady who took my telephone call, and you're going to understand exactly what I'm going to talk about, is in the United States, student loans are huge compared to here.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a different mindset that the students in that country seem to look at the benefit, what they're going to gain moving forward. Now, as I said to the lady who took my telephone call, my neighbour in the US, one of his daughters qualified as a doctor 2 years ago, and she has landed herself with just under, this is not a joke, under $500,000.
Yeah, but we don't want to go that way, do we, Nigel? Surely.
No, but the point I'm making, Nick, is she's got a job now earning $170,000 a year as a 911 trauma doctor, but she's looking to the future that she can pay her loans back. She's got a job, and she's looking for the future of what that loan and what that educator's given her. And I think what's important today, and students don't realise this, with the advancement of AI, there are so many jobs which, sadly, they're looking to get that aren't going to be there.
But if we want the next... I hear what you say, but you'll know better than I haven't lived in the States, because the economics are so different over in the United States. If we want the next generation of nurses, doctors, people in any jobs, then we need to make sure we shouldn't be making money out of them with an extra 3%, surely.
No, but I understand that, Nick, but we're trying to sound flippant. If you want to gain something in life, you have to put your money in, you have to put your back into it to gain it. Look, when anyone has a business, they have to borrow money to make their business grow. And this is the same thing as a student. You have to borrow your money to enhance and secure your future for what you're going to do.
Nigel, thanks for getting involved on that. A lot of people, have a good day. A lot of people want to have their say about what we have come back from the brink, and we'll feature your views on that. But in a related story, the dragon that failed to roar, HMS Dragon, finally got down to the area, but the Navy Lark continues as it's tied up awaiting repairs. Hardly surprising when you talk to the boss about the size of the fleet. How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers.
Plus, in the world of business. A stylish deal. Harry Styles there, and the Trump backer who's going to offer $50 billion to buy the Universal Music Group. More after this. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
The US and Iran have agreed a 2-week ceasefire to allow for further talks to end the war. Iran will coordinate the temporary reopening of the Strait of Hormuz as part of the deal. Sir Keir Starmer has welcomed the truce, saying the UK will do all it can to support and sustain the ceasefire. The Prime Minister is travelling to the Gulf today for talks to ensure the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz remains permanent. And Bill Gates is to give evidence to the US Congressional Committee investigating the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The Microsoft co-founder is the latest high-profile figure to agree to testify before the House Oversight Committee. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest. A very warm day, a high of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
It's the most wonderful time.
Booking Hero. On the beach does way more than beach holidays. We now offer millions of combinations of beach holidays, city breaks and cruises. So whether you fancy swimming, sightseeing or sitting on the top deck of a ship, we've got you covered. So stop booking around and whatever your next holiday looks like, get searching at onthebeach.co.uk.
Abter and Atoll protected.
On the beach.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies in limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Happy Meal just got a cosmic boost because the Super Mario Galaxy movie has landed in cinemas, and Mario hasn't come alone. There's a whole galaxy for your little ones to discover. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 4th of May, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last.
From the big transformations to the small home improvements, you can feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
The label.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33. Back to events, political events in the Gulf, but let's get the business impact of that now. Susanna Streeter is Chief Investment Strategist at Wealth Club and joins us now for an update. And let's start with the markets update. Oil, I think I heard in a ABC News bulletin, at $93 a barrel trading this morning. But where were we prior to the conflict and what have been the highs and lows? Susanna, morning to you.
Good morning. Yes. Well, if you look at just the day before the conflict,
oil erupted. Oil was trading around $71 a barrel. But remember, there was all that bellicose talk before that. So actually, if you look back to mid-February, oil was at $66 a barrel. And even though we have had this sharp fall in crude prices, so just yesterday, Brent crude was trading around $110 a barrel, now down to like 93, you can see that it's still significantly higher than it was before the conflict erupted, because there are still so many questions about whether or not this ceasefire will hold, but also the huge damage wreaked on all of the facilities across the Gulf region, which will take years to repair.
Years to repair there, but if we look at people back here, back at home, they're affected in their wallets and their purses when they go and buy their unleaded or their diesel or whatever. How long, if the price continues to come down, if a deal is done, presumably it will take some months before the drop is felt at the pumps. Susanna?
It's not always some months. It would be more likely to be weeks. But as we've seen in the past, often those prices at the pumps shoot up like a rocket but fall like a feather, actually, when the price of Brent does come down. But I think there would be a really keen eye trained on that. And remember, we've got this fuel finder service now where you can compare prices across the UK much more easily. And the Competition and Markets Authority does have the power to fine retailers, petrol retailers and diesel retailers who aren't updating that system because they recognise the fact that consumers are out of pocket even when it seems as though the prices are falling. But let's remember, I think that the prices are going to still stay relatively elevated because we're not going to see an easing off of this supply disruption anytime soon, despite the ceasefire.
So that's the cars, the vans, the trucks, the motorbikes. What about our aircraft? What's happening with jet fuel?
Well, the jet fuel shortages, we're being told by IATA, the International Air Transport Association, Willie Walsh, he's been speaking, he's the boss, and he said, look, these shortages are going to take months to solve, even if this agreement holds. The reason for that is because the kind of whole system is seized up. The Middle East is a key supplier of refined products, like jet fuel, but because of this disruption to supplies coming out of the Middle East, other nations that produce jet fuel have halted exports as well. So it's going to take time for these panic positions to unwind. So we're still likely to see elevated jet fuel prices, and that could be passed on in terms of higher ticket prices for airlines as they try and recoup the cost.
Let's go to a totally different story, Susanna. Why might the billionaire businessman Bill Ackman, of whom I have to say I didn't know a great deal prior to today, why might he be about to hit the right note?
Well, he wants to take over Universal Music Group. So this is behind acts like Taylor Swift and Adele. And he's actually had significant investments in Universal for some years. And he's been trying to push the group into listing in New York instead of Amsterdam. And now he's gone full on for a takeover. He is offering $64 billion, so a huge amount. But actually, it does seem as though the offer on the table is a big uplift. It's certainly been greeted with some cheer from investors. The share price rose 10%. He reckons there's still significant value to be unlocked if it moves to New York. That's not necessarily always the case, of course, but he reckons that actually the shares have been trading below where they should be. But if this move comes off, we'll have to see. He thinks it's the right notes for him. But as you say, he is a Trump backer. I'm not sure you said that, Nick, but I've been reading about it.
He is. No, I have said that earlier. No, absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's putting his money where his
President
mouth is.
Trump.
Yeah, he's putting his money where his mouth is in the music world. Susanna, I will leave it there. Thank you. Susanna Streeter, Chief Investment Strategist at Wealth Club Universal, one of the so-called Big Three, alongside Sony and Warner Music. 7:38. Let's come to what you're saying. Well, some stinging criticism of Sir James Cleverly, the former Foreign Secretary, the senior Conservative politician, with the views he has of Sir Keir Starmer's visit to the Gulf, because even as I speak, I would imagine Sir Keir is on his way. Ruth in Paisley, or Ruth, I think, in Paisley, or maybe Ruth Paisley. What a cheat James Cleverly has. The government that he was part of in the last 10 years of Tory government has left the UK military in this mess. Talk about cheap politics. George says it's a chorus of Tory bell ringers, same tune every single day. James Cleverly is a stuck record at this point. The story is supposed to be about a global ceasefire, but they find a way to make a partisan attack on Starmer. They spent 14 years hacking our defence services to pieces. Simon in York, good Simon of York, like a Shakespearean novel. James Cleverly is incorrectly explaining Kemi Badenoch's approach to Trump's war. He's being extremely disingenuous and showing no honour whatsoever. And lastly, Paul says, James Cleverly blamed all the woes of our military on Sir Keir Starmer, when Conservatives are the ones to blame for hollowing out our military for 15 years, all of which leads us neatly to the conversation we're going to have now about HMS Dragon, the dragon that has failed to roar. You remember how long it took to get down to the theatre, the scene of operations? But sadly now it was revealed it is tied up somewhere in the eastern Mediterranean, understandably. They're declining to say where exactly, which I fully understand. But it's tied up somewhere in the eastern Mediterranean, waiting repairs for a minor technical issue with onboard water systems, whatever that might mean. So what confidence do we have in this government? And I take on board, and we'll speak to an expert in the moment, about the cuts that were imposed by the previous administration. But we are where we are. We are not where we might want to be. So what about the man who is our defence secretary when questioned about the strength of the UK Navy? How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers.
Mr. Healy, if we've got a fleet of 17 in total, where are they all? We only have HMS Dragon in operation down there now. Where are all the others? Are all the others being repaired in some way, shape or form?
I'm proud of what we're able to do.
Lieutenant General Sir Simon Male is former Deputy Chief of the Defence Staff, former Senior Middle East Advisor at the MOD and author of House of War, and joins me now. Good to have you on, sir. Let's talk a little bit, if we may, with a bit of history. And many of my listeners are understandably, possibly justifiably, pointing the fingers at many years of Tory misrule in the sphere of defence. Would you concur? Good morning.
absolutely, Nick. Take it all the way back to Cameron and Osborne. One of the worst things that the last government did under Osborne was to move the nuclear capability into the conventional defence budget. I mean, the elements of it were always there. And so although we're talking about 2.5% of GDP spent on defence, the reality is when you remove the capability I support, the nuclear deterrent, we're spending about 1.6%. We're almost down with Italy. God bless Italy. And so it's a shocker where we're at. I would say, listening to your previous contributors, that Sir Keir Starmer, of course, has been given a very weak hand. He has had a major opportunity with an SDR to address that weak hand, but he has proved extremely poor at playing a weak hand. He's played it extremely weakly.
Let's talk about that SDR, the Strategic Defence Review. Sir Simon, what did that produce? Remind the listeners what the headlines were from that.
Well, it certainly produced this defence industrial plan for a start, which still hasn't been addressed, a complete revamp of procurement, so we got a better bang for our buck. It certainly talked about major investment back in all sorts of things to do with capability, which is not, of course, simply equipment. It talked about refilling the reduced stocks, because you'll recall, Nick, we've given an awful lot of our capability to the Ukrainians, quite rightly. But we never, ever rebuilt those stocks back. And actually, again, it's a lot of it's about sort of commitment, public commitment to defence, even while we've got Ukraine running, we've got what's going on in the Middle East. And yet, from the government, I feel sorry for old John Healy, and he'll always regret that interview with you, Nick. But he gets very little support from the Chancellor. He gets very little top cover from Keir Starmer, or I suspect every other one of the his front bench colleagues.
Let's have a last word, if we could, Sir Simon, on HMS Dragon. Again, not for a moment doubting the commitment of the men and women who serve on it, but this this purely speaks back to lack of preparation here.
Complete lack of preparation, and we should always have had ships in the Gulf and ships in the Eastern Mediterranean.
Because is it the old expression, if you fail to prepare, prepare to fail? Isn't that the great military watchword?
A very good one. And what's the old cry, if I may finish? Warren Buffett's great cry, when the tide goes out, you soon work out who's been swimming naked. And we've been swimming naked. About time we put a pair of shorts on.
I'll leave that, if I may, with you, Sir Simon. I know you will, but I can't go that far with you. Thank you, Lieutenant General Sir Simon Mayle, former Deputy Chief of the Defence Staff, Senior Middle East Advisor to the Ministry of Defence, and wrote House of War. Let's pick up on what you're saying. 7:44. I've got a minute before we go to the news headlines on this deal. Well, I was going to say Art of the Deal. Don, the Art of the Deal, Donald, what a joke that man is. He started a war he didn't need to start and came out with a deal worse than he went in. Well, if you read Andrew Neil's piece on Saturday, Iran now is in a far stronger position than it ever was and will be charging tolls. Illegal, but people will pay it. When I say people, countries, companies, will pay the toll to get through the Strait of Hormuz, which was never in place prior to Trump's onslaught or shelling. Andy in Portsmouth, let's be honest, Donald Trump plays the game differently. It is Art of the Deal stuff. Really? Take him seriously, not literally, as Nigel Farage has told everyone. So many people stirring the pot, saying he was going to nuke Iran, overanalyzing every word. How stupid do they look now? He gets results. Andy, you must be looking at a different US president than me at the moment. Mike in Crawley, a simplistic view. One was too scared and the other daren't. Iran did not wish to be bombed, and the adults in the room feared Trump wanted to do. The upshot of all this carnage, bluster and deceit is Iran is still in control of the Strait of Hormuz. Netanyahu feels unrestrained by the agreement and will continue to pursue his expansionist policy under the guise of alleged defence. America has shown its military might is emasculated by any campaign that requires longevity. Good point, sir. I'll just leave you with one word on that. Vietnam. In other news, an interview I'll never forget. Former Labour MP and indeed Minister Anne Keane. I spoke with her last month. Now, she told me about her experience of giving up her son in a forced adoption. Continued to affect her once she was in Westminster. There are around 215,000 women in the UK who were forced to give up their babies.
I still keep that shame. As an MP, you get sworn in.
Yes.
I couldn't do it for at least 3 days. I kept going to the ladies' room and thinking, I'm not worthy of this.
Now, if you're listening around this time yesterday, you know that we put this to Health Secretary Wes Streeting, who was pretty punchy on it, and there does appear to be movement. We'll speak with Anne Keane, again in the next hour. Just turned 7:46, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The US and Iran have agreed a 2-week ceasefire to allow for further talks to try and end the war. As part of the deal, Iran will coordinate a temporary reopening of the Strait of Hormuz for shipping traffic. And Sir Keir Starmer has welcomed the agreement and is travelling to the Gulf today for talks about keeping the strait open permanently. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a warm day, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are lengthy delays on the A13 westbound to the M25 junction. It's after a car broke down earlier. In Finsbury Park, there are queues on the Seven Sisters Road southbound to Blackstock Road for some emergency works. In Regent's Park, Primrose Hill Road is closed both ways, along with Regent's Park Road, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. Very busy on the M3 southbound to Junction 4A at Farnborough. A car's broken down. On the trains, East Midlands Railway and Thameslink services aren't running between Luton and Bedford. It's because of an ongoing investigation. Still severe delays on the Elizabeth line to and from Reading, and also Great Western Railway are running a reduced service between Paddington and Reading.
This is LBC.
Hola, Einstein here, tucking into tacos and the best business advice with my friend Deborah Meaden.
Because like a recipe, in business you've got to get the basics right.
Indeed, and a smart meter can help you track your energy use and costs over time. Oh, I miscalculated the hot sauce.
That's more control of your business budgeting, at least.
Join the 9 out of 10 small business owners happy with their smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter. Eligibility may vary. Consumer action required. 93% of small businesses surveyed in 2024 were happy.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
You know what you're getting with a bank holiday weekend? Traffic. Drizzle. Service station snacks. The sea.
Look, the sea.
Pebbly beach. Aggressive seagulls. Drinks at the local cafe/nightclub. A late night takeaway.
Chili, garlic.
Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
Looking for a new kitchen that you can't wait to come home to? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, from ultra-modern to timeless classics. And options for every budget, with kitchens for first homes
and Forever Homes too. So book your free kitchen design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
2, 1, 0% APR on all-electric Mini Cooper. What was that, Luton? Handling is extraordinary. Centre of gravity so low. And it could be ours with a 15% deposit and 3-year term. OK, Luton, reroute me to the nearest Mini retailer now.
Land a new all-electric Mini Cooper with 0% APR. Report to your Mini retailer today. Mini UK is a credit broker. Ordered and delivered by 30th of June. PCP finance with Mini Financial Services. Subject to status. 18 plus. T's and C's apply. Mini.co.uk/Cooper.
Chase is the digital bank that gives you 1% cash back on groceries.
So can I get cash back on cake mix?
Indeed.
And icing?
Yep.
And sprinkles?
Sure.
And candles?
Yeah. And you can turn all that cash back into a nice birthday treat.
How do you know it's my birthday?
Just a hunch. Get 1% cash back on groceries, fuel and everyday transport when you spend with Chase. Search Chase Bank. 18 plus UK residents. 1% cash back on this debit card spending for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Eligibility and exceptions apply. May be changed or withdrawn.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries. See you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before eight, let's come away from global affairs and come to domestic matters and proof in the unlikely event that proof were needed, that government needed to do something about concerns of knife crime. Of course, came in events at North London yesterday. A 21-year-old man was fatally stabbed at Primrose Hill. A second man, believed to be in his 20s, was found by police in nearby Regent's Park Road with stab wounds. He has survived but needed hospital care. Police are investigating. This comes as the government talks of live facial recognition cameras to be introduced in so-called knife crime hotspots. Let's get more details then from Labour MP, Police and Crime Minister Sarah Jones. I'm sure, first off, we must give full credit to the Met and hope that their investigations yield results, and we can't go too closely into that. But what might it mean in areas such as these going forward, Minister? Good morning.
Morning. Look, it's absolutely tragic what happened in Primrose Hill, and we obviously are thinking of the families. We have a coalition against knife crime that we convene, and it has quite a few parents of people who have died, and the horror cannot be overstated, and that's why we have our mission, which is a moral mission to halve knife crime in a decade. What we're publishing today is the action plan of how we reach that target. We have made some progress, a 27% fall in knife homicides since we came to power, and an 8% fall overall in knife crime. What we're announcing today is an action plan that spans multiple government departments, multiple interventions. With these hotspot areas, we're using new technology to really hone in on the small, actually, number of areas where knife crime occurs. All of our knife crime basically happens in about 2.5% of our country. If you hone in on those areas, you use live facial recognition, knife arches, neighbourhood policing, and other interventions, also support for kids who might be getting themselves involved in crime, then you can really bear down on the numbers. So that's what we're announcing today.
So this is the Knife Crime Concentration Fund, £26 million to 27 police forces in England and Wales. Now, they talk about a pilot programme that was run, catching criminals every 34 minutes. Was that in Croydon, the area that you represent?
So in Croydon, we have permanent live facial recognition positions at the start and end of the high street. It's only used for a certain small period of time each week, and we have to say when we're using it.
So how would this be different, Minister?
So what we are rolling out is live facial recognition vans.
Are they marked or are they plain clothes?
No, they are marked. You have to say that you're using this technology. I was in Cardiff recently looking at one of the vans that they have there. It's incredibly effective, both as a van and with a permanent placement. We catch huge numbers, actually, of wanted criminals, and it is a really important part of our knife crime plan, along with all the other things that we are doing. We also, I I should say, you know, this is a way of catching some really violent criminals. At the same time, we are consulting on what the rules are about when this live facial recognition is used, so that the public understand and know and can appreciate what we use it for, what we don't.
Well, I mean, I have to put to you, Minister, I don't actually hold with this, but I respect their view. Big Brother Watch say, and I quote, live facial recognition turns every passerby into a walking barcode and treats us all as suspects. Minister?
Yeah, I don't agree. I did meet with them just before recess, and, you know, there are lots of organisations that have some concerns. I'm not going to apologise for new technology that enables us to catch serious criminals at all, but I will accept that we need to make sure we're using it in the right way. It does not... What live facial recognition does is it scans your face. If it matches a watch list of wanted criminals, then there's a match. If not, it discards your image, doesn't hold it at all. And of course, always a human police officer will then look at that and see whether the match is correct and then take action.
Well, I mean, I think I also need to read what the Ben Kinsella Trust says, which is this is targeted, data-driven approach represents a crucial part of the government's response to tackling knife crime. So that's a view we should probably heed. Just lastly on this, how is an area determined to be a so-called knife crime hotspot, Minister?
Well, so new technology...
I sense you knew that question was coming, by the way. You were
No, I mean, it's because it's a bit techie, but new technology basically has broken the whole country down into 1.5 million small areas, very small areas, size of a few football pitches. And we can see that all actually of knife crime happens in 2.5% of areas of this country, which is quite extraordinary when you think about it. But it means that we can really hone in on the areas that are problematic.
So this is where the crimes take place already.
Okay. And so alongside the policing interventions, we are, for example, in the areas where there are schools, we're also going to be operating some extra support for schools to make sure they're doing what they need to do to keep their pupils safe. So there's a whole programme of work around what those interventions are in those areas. Sometimes it will involve knife arches, it might involve more CCTV, more lighting, it might involve more police patrols at certain times of day. It will depend on the area, because knife crime varies in different parts of the country and is used in different ways.
How do we know if this is working? What will we look for? What data will give you and your colleagues heart?
Well, the overall knife crime figures down, they went up 9% in the last 2 years of the last government. They've gone down 8% under this government. We've taken 63,000 knives off the streets. We have, and that doesn't include stop and search, which is also quite a large number. We have seen a fall of 27% in terms of homicides. We want to see that bearing down. We're particularly focused on knife-enabled robbery. So about 40-odd% of all knife crime is knife-enabled robbery. Big intervention from police to tackle that as well. So there is a whole raft of measures. I will be bearing down and meeting with police chiefs all the time to make sure we are keeping the focus on this, because just because the numbers are going in the right direction doesn't mean they'll continue to. We have to keep the push.
Well, let's talk about numbers the last couple of minutes together. You featured in the Daily Mirror, you're saying that the government is holding back shoplifting, the number of thieves brought to justice going up. The number of criminal charges, says Home Office Minister, has risen some 21%, which is obviously good news, but you are aware the number of offences is rising as well, Minister.
Yes, 100%. 100%. And
although you're tackling, respectfully, you're tackling one side of it, you're not tackling the other. That's fair, isn't it?
Yes. What I would say is that the increase was very significant in the last 2 years of the last government. The increase is still going up, you're right, but it's going up by less than it was.
It's up by 5% to 519,381, which, you are right, prior to that it was at 8% rise. So
yes,
still rising.
So the curve is going in the right direction, but we need it to go down like knife crime. So you're absolutely right. Just a caveat to that, which I know doesn't help my case, but we do want people to report this crime. It is not acceptable that it happens, and I talk to retailers where they say that sometimes they don't report it. So I want them to report it. So on that sense, I want the numbers to go up, because I want every single crime to be
reported.
So if
you go looking for something, you're going to find more of it, obviously. That's a fact of human nature.
And we are changing the law in two ways. One, to introduce an offence of assault against a shop worker, because that happens a lot and it's completely unacceptable, and the government needs needs to be very loud and clear about that. And secondly, under the previous government, theft under £200 wasn't investigated by the police. That is completely unacceptable. We are changing that, so every theft needs to be investigated. Now, you need police to do that, and that is why we are shifting police into our neighbourhoods, so they are there to tackle the epidemic of everyday crime, like shoplifting.
Everyday crime being committed in the stockbroker part of Kent, known as Sunridge, is the arrival of travellers over the Easter weekend who appear to have laid down tarmac and taken over a field. Local people are obviously very, very infuriated by this and say there's not enough legislation. A, are you aware of it? B, what powers are there for people to move on these supposed illegal traveller sites?
So there are powers for the police to move on traveller sites. Of course, this is a challenge. It won't just be there. That happens in other parts of the country as well. We've had problems with it in my own area of Croydon before. So the police do have powers, local authority working together.
Sufficient powers, Minister?
Sufficient powers, I would say, yes. But of course, we always keep these things under review. I'm not ever going to say that we wouldn't look at these things. But I think the powers are there. The question is making sure we've got the police capacity and the local authority capacity to be able to act where they need to.
Reform UK leader Nigel Farage has questioned the wisdom of not allowing Ye or Kanye West to perform at this wireless festival. He thinks we're going down a dangerous path. What would your response be?
I would say I don't agree with him at all. Of course, freedom of speech, that's always going to be a debate. But look, it's not uncommon for us to not let people into the country when they are objectionable. There will be clerics who spout hate speech who we do not let into the country. I think with Kanye West, there was a pattern of behaviour. It wasn't just a one-off act, and I think it's right, and I think most people in the public would probably agree with us that it's right that we don't want a man like that in this country.
Lastly, as a representative of the government on the so-called media round, are you aware that HMS Dragon now is tied up awaiting repairs somewhere in the eastern Mediterranean after it took such a long time to get there? This is a rather embarrassing day for the Royal Navy and the government, isn't it?
Well, look, I know you will have had this conversation with ministers before. We know that the capacity of our armed forces was hollowed out under the last government. We are spending £270 billion this Parliament in terms of HMS Dragon. It stopped for a planned sort of check, and there are some technical difficulties which will be, I am told, resolved very quickly. We, of course, very quickly, that's all I can say. The Prime Minister,
48 hours?
The Prime Minister is flying to the Gulf today.
Yes,
he will be meeting with our personnel who are there shooting down drones and defending our interests, and he will thank them for it. We have been there with those Typhoons jets since the war started 5.5 weeks ago. We are working in a real leadership role to bring together those 40 countries who are working really hard on how we open up the straits, get back to normal, get the strait operating again. These things obviously are very complex and very difficult, but it is wrong to say that we do not have a presence there, because we absolutely do, defending our interests.
Minister, thank you for the background. The so-called high knife crime hotspots and the plan to tackle those particular areas of the country is outlined by Sarah Jones, Policing Crime Minister. Thank you for your time, Minister. 1 minute after 8, LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the US and Iran have agreed a 2-week ceasefire to allow for further talks to end the war. Iran will coordinate the temporary reopening of the Strait of Hormuz as part of the deal. Sir Keir Starmer is travelling to the Gulf today for talks to ensure that the vital shipping lane remains open. Journalist and broadcaster Andrew Neil has told Nick that he doesn't think Sir Keir's presence will be impactful.
He won't achieve anything. It's irrelevant. He's going because he thinks he's spearheading some kind of plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. First of all, we don't have a navy that can play any part in reopening Strait of Hormuz. You've already given the headline about HMS Dragon is now already out of operation, and Iran has made it clear it now thinks it is in charge of the Strait of Hormuz, and breaking news, it is.
Both Iran and the US have been invited to peace talks on Friday in Pakistan, which has been a key mediator in the war. Following President Trump's announcement overnight of a ceasefire, global oil prices fell sharply. Brent crude is currently trading at around $92 a barrel this morning, well under the initial spike of $100. But investment expert Susanna Streeter has told Nick it doesn't mean that petrol prices will fall quickly.
It's not always some months. It would be more likely to be weeks. But as we've seen in the past, often those prices at the pumps shoot up like a rocket but fall like a feather, actually, when the price of Brent does come down. But let's remember, I think that the prices are going to still stay relatively elevated because we're not going to see an easing off of this supply disruption anytime soon, despite the ceasefire.
In other news this morning, Bill Gates is to give evidence to the US Congressional Committee looking into the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The Microsoft co-founder is the latest high-profile figure to agree to testify. Gates has not been accused of misconduct, and his recent inclusion in the Epstein files does not imply any criminal activity. A 21-year-old man's died after being stabbed at the Primrose Hill viewpoint in North London. A second man was found nearby with stab wounds yesterday. No arrests have been made. And opposition to resident doctor strikes in England among the public appears to be growing, according to new polling. A YouGov survey suggests 55% of respondents opposed the industrial action. In April, that figure stood at 33%. The walkouts by members of the British Medical Association over jobs and pay are entering their second day. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,348. It closed down 87 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest. A very warm day for England and Wales. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Don't know what it's like in your house, but keeping everyone entertained can be a nightmare. Take the pressure off with EE's award-winning TV and full-fibre broadband. With Netflix Now, TNT Sports and more. And get their most powerful Wi-Fi 7 as standard, so everyone can stream their films, series and sport at the same time. Switch to EE TV and broadband today.
New BT Group customers only. 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 5 minutes after eight on Wednesday, April the 8th. In this hour, the rap sheet continues over that attempt to bring Ye or Kanye West to the country. What were the organisers thinking? But to move the conversation on, is it the role of government to get involved in something like this? Is it, as the Reform UK leader Nigel Farage says, the start of a slippery slope if we don't let people in the country because they don't like what they say or what they think? We'll look at that in more detail. And if we're talking about leaders of political parties, here's Sir Ed Davey, Lib Dem leader, calling on the Prime Minister to withdraw US access to UK airbases.
Withdraw US access to UK airbases and make it crystal clear, British soil will never be used for illegal military action. We must stand up for the rule of law and for peace.
Sir Ed Davey joins me later in this hour. To a story I was just discussing with the policing minister, a traveller, quotes, invasion, close quotes, in Kent.
There's anger in the Kent countryside after a traveller site appeared over the bank holiday weekend, triggering a standoff between locals, police and the new arrivals. I'm LBC's George Ike in Sundridge.
Plus, if you were listening last month, an interview I will never forget with the former Labour MP and indeed Minister Anne Keane, one of around 215,000 women who were forced adoption of babies back in the 60s and 70s. She's calling for the government to issue an apology to those victims.
We've been banging on the door for a while. The door's now been open for us and we want to sit round the table and help the government to do this apology properly.
Considerable support offered yesterday by Health Secretary Wes Streeting, who pointed out that he was in fact the mother of he was the son of a teenage mum. So what does Anne Keane make of what she heard yesterday? She'll join us later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Shambolic, the organisers of the Wireless Festival now, as the whole event has been cancelled. Goodness knows how much money they have lost, and some would say deservedly so. It's extraordinary now that they're talking about how there is no place for anti-Semitism.
when just hours prior to that statement, they were saying that Ye, Kanye West, should come here to be able to apologise and to meet with Jewish leaders and Jewish members of the Jewish community. We now know it's off, but some people are questioning the wisdom of the government deciding now not to let Ye or Kanye West in to this country, as a appeal the Home Office gave, but then cancelled the necessary visa. Nigel Farage is quoted as saying, if Keir Starmer were to ban people coming to Britain whose views he didn't like, almost everybody wouldn't be allowed in. I think it's a dangerous path to go down. Is it dangerous? Just for the news, I spoke with someone who's related, Policing and Crime Minister Sarah Jones. She told me,
of course, freedom of speech, that's always going to be a debate. But look, it's not uncommon for us to not let people into the country when they are objectionable. There will be clerics who spout hate speech who we do not let into the country. I think with Kanye West, there was a pattern of behaviour. It wasn't just a one-off act. And I think it's right. And I think most people in the public would probably agree with us that it's right that we don't want a man like that in this country.
Jewish groups have welcomed the decision to ban him. Even Friends star David Schwimmer has got involved. He's talked about there needing to be moral clarity. Unlike Wireless and Festival Republic, they decided not to platform an artist who became one of the most recognisable hate-mongering bigots in the world. With friends like that, who needs enemies? But was it the right decision? Maxwell Marlowe is Director of Public Affairs at the Adam Smith Institute and joins me now. Nigel Farage, for many, has a point in a way. Where are you on this? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, we've just published a free speech bill drafted by a number of lawyers, which seeks to
worry when I hear a number of lawyers.
Don't talk about Labour, the Labour government like that, Nick. Come on. The overall point of this is that we think that freedom of speech is under attack in this country. I think Nigel Farage does have a point, but I think banning Kanye West in this instance is wrong. And let me explain why. He's just done a sellout big concert in California, of all places, the big liberal blue state of California, to 51,000 people. And he didn't utter a single bit of hate speech there. He's offered contrition and apologies in January. He's offered contrition and apologies before this. My point, and I think the point of the Institute, is very simple, which is that unless you're going to come here and violate Section 4 of the Public Order Act, which, criminalises direct incitement of hatred and violence. I don't think there was much evidence of him doing that. He's made a number of statements about not doing it. Unless there is evidence of him coming here to do that, I don't think he should have revoked the visa, fundamentally. And I do think it's a freedom of speech problem because he wanted to come here and perform. And now, look, I'm not here to defend Kanye West and Mike Ye, whatever he wants to be called. Mm. What I'm here to uphold and defend is freedom of speech. And I think that has been violated in this situation, as it's done, over 30 times a day with people being arrested for, non-crime hate instances, as much as they've been abolished on social media.
The government point to other people who have been banned in the past. Where is the line to be drawn?
I think the line is quite clear in the law, to be honest, Nick. And as I've just said, Section 4 of the Public Order Act makes it very clear. And if the government didn't have evidence that he was going to come here and violate that act, and as we heard from the government ministers, especially yesterday, they thought there'd be, disorder or, a public order problem, if he came. I don't agree with that. We saw the campaign against anti-Semitism yesterday coming here, saying essentially, we'd hold democratic, sensible, protest outside of Wireless if it were carrying on. If he came, I think that is completely reasonable. I'd probably be on that picket line fundamentally. I don't agree with what Kanye West has said at all. I condemn it entirely. But fundamentally, he should be allowed to come here and do activities that we wouldn't agree with. He's not a cleric. He's not calling for jihad. He's not calling for, the Ummah to rise up against, against the great Satan. He's come here to perform music. I think there's a really big difference here, Nick.
But lastly, Maxwell, aren't you arguing it yourself? If you're saying that you would actually be on that picket line, then why would you afford him the platform in the first place?
Because I don't think it's the government's role to decide who can and can't come to Wireless Festival.
Grateful for your time, Maxwell Martin, Director of Public Affairs at the Adam Smith Institute. Thank you for that, 12 after 8. Let's bring to the conversation Itay Kashti, who is an Israeli record producer based in London, who was, and I remember speaking to him at the time, the victim of an anti-Semitic kidnapping attempt a couple of years ago, and I remember that conversation we had over that. Good to have you on again, under, should we say, at least mildly happier circumstances. Supportive of what the government does, is it the role of government to decide that they don't want to hear certain views? Morning to you.
Good morning. It is a bit of a divisive subject, I have to agree. And it took me a little bit of time to form an opinion because, like the previous people said before me, freedom of speech is quite important and it's a bit bad to kind of ban people on the one hand. On the other hand, I think what happens with Kanye West isn't showing regular circumstances. He was kind of showing a lot of hate speech and... the point to make here is that when you have skin in the game, you really feel the need to kind of stop and say, hold on a second, this is not right. And what I mean is, as a Jewish community, we don't want to shut people's mouths. We simply don't feel safe. And this is at the heart of it. And people need to remember that from a more empathetic point of view.
Do you feel you would not feel safe with Kanye West, yay, in the country, Itay?
I tell you what, I don't think he poses any danger to anybody in person. But if you roll back to last year's Glastonbury for mm-hmm. 1 second, you remember what happened with Bob Dylan in there? Mm-hmm. Now, again, a bit divisive, but when a whole crowd chants death to the IDF, I had to be in the IDF, not because I was a raging soldier, I was actually quite a failed soldier, but at the same time, you know, it was the law, it was compulsory, it was national service, and I had to go through with it 20, 30 years ago, I'm not disclosing my age, but at the end of the day, you know, if I was to buy a ticket for a lot of money and stand in the field while people are chanting, you know, it's not an ideal scenario, and I don't know if that would not repeat itself in a Kanye West concert.
Finally, Itay, to those who would say, but the man is here to perform. He's apologised. He wants to open a dialogue with Jewish community leaders here. He's not here giving political speeches. How would you respond?
I would say that apologising is a good start. And actions are actually measured by actions, not words. And over time, we'll see how genuine it is.
Maybe a failed soldier, but successful musician, Itay Kashti, thank you for joining us. Israeli record producer based in London. Look up that extraordinary anti-Semitic kidnapping, which she did tell us about some time ago, took place back in 2024. So we're not talking the rights or wrongs. The decision has now been made. Bringing Ye or West in, it's the government involvement that we're discussing now, not the appalling mismanagement of the Wireless Festival and Festival Republic. I think we all know that, and that speaks for themselves. We'll talk about that. And also, coming up after the news, a report from Sundridge, the latest part of the country that has been blighted by arrival of illegal travellers. Something I tackle Police and Crime Minister, Labour MP Sarah Jones, on in the previous hour.
The powers are there. The question is making sure we've got the police capacity and the local authority capacity to be able to act where they need to.
More on that after this. It is 8:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer and other world leaders have welcomed the agreed two-week ceasefire between Iran and the United States. As part of the deal, commercial ships will be able to pass through the Strait of Hormuz under Iranian supervision. Sir Keir is travelling to the Gulf today for talks aimed at keeping the vital shipping lane open permanently. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest. A very warm day for England and Wales. A high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M25, anti-clockwise from junction 26 at Waltham Abbey to 25 at the A10. It's because a car broke down early. It's just been recovered, but it's still very slow. In Finsbury Park, there are queues on the Seven Sisters Road southbound heading towards the Blackstock Road junction. Some emergency works are having to take place. Also in Regent's Park, Primrose Hill and Regent's Park Road are both closed, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. On the train, still no Avanti West Coast and London Northwestern services between Milton and Keynes and Euston because of the ongoing works. Severe delays on the Elizabeth line to and from Reading, but East Midlands Railway and Thames Link services are now running between Luton and Bedford, but with delays.
This is LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him,
This is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prep for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Way up here, right at the edge of oxygen, in space. That's where you'll find us. O2 Satellite keeps you connected in more places than ever before. So even when you're far from everything, you won't have to miss a thing. Introducing O2 Satellite. O2, essential for living.
30-day rolling add-on, £3 per month. Device type, app, location and other restrictions apply. See o2.co.uk/terms.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 8. Sandy, coming to you, the first call. Let's just do some. I probably haven't done enough of the emails and the texts that are coming in. Dell says, did anyone cancel Charlie Kirk from speaking at the Oxford Union? No, we have far more abhorrent people in the UK. We give Donald Trump a second visit. This is cancel culture again. I hate to say it, but I agree with Nigel Farage. Anthony and Hove, why ban Kanye West if Bob Villain is allowed to perform? And Kayella simply says, freedom of speech, anyone? Question mark. Sandy and Amersham, is it the role of the government? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, it's the role of somebody to keep an eye on people like him, because it wasn't just one comment he made. There's a string of comments, and I think it identifies a belief.
Yes,
and
I think it's called a pattern of behaviour, I think, isn't it?
Yes, and so if it was the one comment, I think we can, you know, an apology and everything, we can work with that. But this is his belief. This is deep down belief, and all the apology that he's made since, I don't believe any of that. It's just because he doesn't want to lose the money and he wants to perform. I don't think he's welcome. I don't think encouraging people like him with young people who can be so easily sort of
wind people up, is that what you're trying to say?
Yes. It's wind them up, just, you know, those that might have similar thoughts, they feel, oh, there's somebody there that, you know, thinks like us, oh, you know.
Yeah, well, that's very much what Ishtay was saying, what the Israeli, Israeli record producer was saying. But again, and I think I would have taken the action, but we've got to be careful that we don't let people in the country because we don't like what they say.
No, I agree with that. Yes, we can't just stop everybody because then it would become ridiculous. I just think with this situation, and because he's such a performer to young people, I just don't think it's healthy. And I don't think he should be rewarded with doing it, to be honest. I really don't.
If he wants
to come here, I wouldn't be too bothered about that, because his performance skills would be limited. But to actually be able to perform after that just because he said sorry, not good enough.
Sandy, thank you. Eric in Woodford. Eric, the role of the government, not good enough, as Sandy just said. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Yes, I think the role of the government is good enough, actually. What I find a bit puzzling is Kanye West is a black man.
Yes.
And he's he said he supports the views of Adolf Hitler, who is a white supremacist.
Yes, I know.
Had Hitler succeeded in killing the Jews, does Mr. West think he would accept black people into his Aryan world?
Well, I would suggest it shows how warped and muddled Ye's or Kanye West's thinking is, and questions the wisdom of ever inviting him to the festival in the first place as the headline act.
Thanks very much, Nick. Good morning.
Have a good one, Eric. Thank you for that. I was saying like that. I'd rather be very, very respectable down in Woodford. I rather like that. I think we should introduce that more often. Good morning. Good morning. 8:23. People who are not having a good morning are down in the leafy Kent stockbroker village of Sundridge. I have to declare a mild interest. It is somewhere that is known to me, but at the weekend, Easter weekend, the travellers came a-calling. They paved over a field and ripped up hedges on a country lane. Under the cover of darkness, travellers reportedly brought in diggers and machinery into the field near Sevenoaks, and there were understandable confrontations with the locals. LBC's George Ike reports from the sleepy Kentish village of Sundridge.
Standing here in Sundridge, the sun is shining, the birds are singing, but apart from that, it's really very quiet, and you'd probably have no idea that tensions here are at boiling point about a new traveller camp that appeared over the bank holiday.
I'm not happy about it.
The community is not against them. The community just want the rules to be applied.
They cause a lot of mess. There is usually an increase in lawlessness in the area.
People living here say in the middle of the night over the weekend, diggers arrived to prepare the field. Gail lives yards from this camp.
It was apparent it was a traveller's coming in. There was a lot of exchanges on various WhatsApp groups, and the following day the caravan started being brought in, or mobile homes, whatever they are. Apparently one local was arrested for trying to block the road with his car.
Two people who've moved onto the camp didn't want to be recorded, but told me they felt as though they'd been threatened, with their family and children being filmed by locals, and that one man had said he would shoot them with a shotgun. Richie, who is one of the neighbours of the camp, told me things became very tense on Sunday during a standoff with police as a caravan became stuck on Church Road.
Two members of the community got arrested. I was talking to a resident, she was only 60 or 70, and parked the car in front of her driveway, and she was treated with arrest, impounded the vehicle, criminal record, and all these things. So we're really upset with the police action.
For some context, this is a very narrow country lane with long driveways and large leafy gardens, with the average detached house here costing more than £1 million. Margaret Tyra runs the Sundridge Gallery just down the road.
All the residents who live up there want a quiet life. You know, it will affect them, and there are country lanes which are very narrow, and quite frankly, it's not suitable for that kind of operation.
Richie says this is not about racism, but about a problem with planning rules.
You can't have a static home, you can't have a caravan, unless you ask for planning permission. It's not us against them, we're not against the traveller community. I'm a foreigner, been very welcome here for 30 years, I never felt that I don't belong here. The community is not against them. The community just want the rules to be applied.
The camp's arrival comes as the Tories announced they would tear down illegal camps if elected, as Matt Vickers told us yesterday here on LBC.
People who work hard, who do the right thing, who play by the rules, deserve fair treatment. People who choose to abuse those rules and other people's property should be subject to real consequences.
But would that convince neighbours of this camp to vote Conservative at the next election?
Nothing is going to encourage me to vote for any particular party at the moment.
I'll live off for them, because they are pro-business, they're pro-community. I don't believe in the current government.
Sevenoaks Council say they've been visiting the site regularly and are considering their options, but have issued a temporary stop notice which stops more caravans entering the site. It's not entirely clear what that means for one family who are already living on site. Meanwhile, Kent Police say they were there to help reopen the road and manage the situation, with some locals blocking the road with cars.
George Ike reporting. Well, I'm sure if you live in Sundridge, the fact that Sevenoaks District Council are visiting regularly and monitoring the situation, well, that's all right. Then I was worried for a moment. What does that risible parcel of cobblers actually mean for those folk down there? But what about the level of powers that local authorities enjoy or don't have? I was speaking with Policing and Crime Minister Sarah Jones in the previous hour. Do they have enough powers?
Just
So there are powers for the police to move on traveller sites. Of course, this is a challenge. It won't just be there. That happens in other parts of the country as well. We've had problems with it in my own area of Croydon before. So the police do have powers, local authority working together.
Sufficient powers, Minister?
Sufficient powers, I would say yes, but of course we always keep these things under review. I'm not ever going to say that we wouldn't look at these things, but I think the powers are there. The question is making sure we've got the police capacity and the local authority capacity to be able to act where they need to.
This is what you're saying on social media, on the text. Pete says you'll find illegal traveller camps always pop up over the long Easter break. Same in Merseyside. Illegal sites set up this weekend, Thursday evening, after the council break up for the long weekend. They move machinery and ready for an early start. Fence went up Friday morning. A dozen caravans arrived that day. Bulldozers flattening the land. Highly organised. On a lighter note, Stephen asks, can travellers repair the potholes? I suppose it brings a bit of a smile. You might want to get involved in that. 8:28, let's get to who's been hanging on the line. Manny in Potter's Bar. Manny, your view of the government's action as regards the Wireless Festival. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. First time caller. Really lovely.
Thank you very much. Great to have you on, sir. What are you going to tell me?
Lovely. So just want to talk about the Kanye West situation. Firstly, I'm not a fan of Kanye West. Don't understand his music. Never listen to it. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm totally against hate speech, anti-Semitism. But there are a couple of things here I really want us as a nation, as people, to really understand. So Kanye West has gone in and said all these things he said.
Yes.
But he's apologised. And as part of his apology, he said, I suffer with bipolar, which is a mental health condition.
Yes.
But a lot of viewers have then gone on to say, well, we're not going to accept your apology or your mental health diagnosis because there's been a pattern of behaviour. You've not done it once. You've done it multiple times.
And so does that justify the government act? Because that's today's question, actually, Manny, is whether the government are right to get involved.
Absolutely not. I think the Prime Minister and the rest of the government, along with all the other things happening in the world, should have much more important things to be dealing with.
What if you were Jewish and you felt that your personal security could be threatened by not Kanye or Ye, but the sort of sentiment he might whip up at Finsbury Park?
Well, again,
isn't that the duty of government to protect citizens? No? What do you think?
Absolutely the duty of the government to protect citizens, but there are methods and there are ways in which they could have taken a look to see, is he coming to incite hate? No, he's not. He's just coming to perform. Has he apologised for his actions? Yes, he has. Is he looking to make amends? Yes, he has, because he said, I'm looking to meet with the Jewish community in London. And that could have been an opportunity for him to learn, for him to show his remorse, or for them to actually have a way of judging to see, this person has made a mistake. We want to welcome them back. Forgiveness needs to be something that needs to be brought back to society.
Manny, great hearing from you. First time, first class. Thank you. Have yourself a good day. Be like Manny. Get it off your chest. Get it on the radio. Call me on that number, 058 or 085. I've no idea. And I'm not going to do it after more than 20 years, I can assure you. Lee, you'll be the next caller on that. I hope you can hold when we can give you a better run after the news. Where we'll also be hearing from the leader of the Lib Dems, Ed Davey, criticising the government over its decision to send the King to the US for a state visit.
The government has very belatedly started criticising Donald Trump, but unfortunately, on this occasion, they made the wrong decision and advised that the King's state visit should go ahead.
Plus, later in the show, university challenged. Action by the government to tackle the moans over student loans, but are they going far enough? That's in the next hour. 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Newstime, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer has welcomed the agreed 2-week ceasefire between Iran and the US. President Trump announced the truce just 90 minutes before his deadline last night for the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. As part of the deal, commercial ships will be able to pass through the strait under Iranian supervision. Sir Keir is travelling to the Gulf today for talks aimed at keeping the vital shipping lane open permanently. After the ceasefire announcement, there was a fall in global oil prices. Brent crude is currently trading at around $92 a barrel, but prices remain above pre-war levels. And speaking to Nick this morning, a government minister has denied the docking of HMS Dragon in the eastern Mediterranean is embarrassing for the UK. The warship, which was dispatched on the 10th of March to protect UK bases in Cyprus, is currently undergoing routine maintenance. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK, outbreaks of rain for the northwest, a very warm day in parts, a high of 26 degrees.
on the latest episode of The News Agents.
We have a little quiz for you. Who has just tweeted, "A whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again. I don't want that to happen, but it probably will. However, now that we have complete and total regime change, where different, smart and less radicalized minds prevail, perhaps something revolutionary and wonderful will happen. Who knows?" Answers on a postcard.
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Happy Meal just got a cosmic boost because the Super Mario Galaxy movie has landed in cinemas and Mario hasn't come alone. There's a whole galaxy for your little ones to discover. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 4th of May, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last.
Train to Brighton, spa day with the girls. Apparently it's on the beach.
You'll never get me in that ice bath.
Oh, actually, this is quite nice. Blue skies, gentle waves. Should we get in the sauna now? Train back, still so relaxed. Now let's plan the next one.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London Victoria to Brighton from only £8. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
There it is, her suspicious face. She doesn't believe you. All you did was tell her your shirt was chenille. She said, "What's chenille?" You said, "Dunno, but you do know it feels chic." And so does she. She felt it for almost too long. Then you gave a twirl to show off the fit. She nearly spat out her croffin. You deliver the final bombshell. "It's from Primark, only £14. Surprise is served. Shockingly chic for £14. That's so Primark. Available in-store and on click and collect.
From the big transformations to the small home improvements, you can feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:34, Lee in Brentwood. I will come to you to talk about Kanye West, but I have got a leader of one of the major political parties hanging on the line. So, Lee, I will come to you, but I want to bring into the conversation Sir Ed Davey, leader of the Lib Dems, who has been calling now on the government to withdraw UK access to UK, US access to UK bases. Sir Ed Davey, who is in Hull, I understand, and we'll talk about that later, joins me now. Why is that necessary? Do we not enjoy great protection, courtesy of our American friends and allies? Sir Ed, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I said that in response to what was a spine-chilling threat by Donald Trump to destroy civilization last night, which had even his supporters in the United States saying he was going too far. You know, what we've just witnessed is the classic Donald Trump cycle of destruction. He does a really idiotic thing, stupid thing with this war. Then he pretends everything's fine. Then he leaves other people to fix, and he wants us all to praise him. Well, surely we've all now seen through Donald Trump. We've seen now that he's not a reliable ally to the UK, and I'm afraid a Trump-led White House will no longer be trusted by many of his allies.
But why would we withdraw support? If you listen to Paddy McGuinness, who was the former Deputy Director of National Security, he would say we live under the umbrella of security provided to us by our US friends and allies, and indeed Iran is a nation that, through its proxies, claimed the lives of many British service personnel. So, Ed.
Nick, I've always valued the relationship between the UK and the US. It is really, really important. The problem is, if the facts change, you have to change your approach. And with Trump in the White House, he's insulted our troops, he's insulted our country, he's created this idiotic war which has damaged the Middle East, damaged the United States, and damaged our country. You know, go and look at the price people are paying for their petrol and their diesel. That's thanks to Donald Trump and all the British politicians who supported him, like Nigel Farage and Kemi Badenoch. But, you know, this is someone who's not a friend of our country, and we have to work out how we defend our country better. We're going to have to spend a lot more on defence, Nick, a lot more on defence. We saw how dreadful the situation was. We were not ready to defend our allies here. We were too dependent on America. I think that's the issue. We've got to build up our own defence.
But, Sir Ed, had we not had our American friends and allies, we might not have been able to defend our military assets and our citizens, personnel in the area. Surely you're arguing against yourself there, Sir Ed.
Not at all. We were working with many of our European allies, our Commonwealth allies, our allies
in the
area.
What aircraft did they have?
They had plenty. We had aircraft going off to Cyprus. Now, let me be really clear with you, Nick. I value the American relationship. We all should, and we want to make it work. But we have to play the hand as we see it. It's really clear the way Donald Trump has behaved with this idiotic war has damaged the relationships and America's standing in the world. I think that's just sort of uncontroversial.
But our friendship is with America, isn't it? Not with the current incumbents. Surely you agree with that.
No, I totally agree with that. And that's why we need to work with American politicians, even in the Republican Party, who've gone along with Donald Trump so far, who see that what he's been doing is wrong. And there are so many American politicians and generals and foreign policy experts who think Donald Trump has let down his own country. I agree with them. And so we need to work with our American allies who can be trusted. But we have to call out Donald Trump. I've been doing that for many months now. In fact, I've been a lone voice in Parliament calling out Donald Trump, whereas, you know, the Prime Minister, Kemi Badenoch for the Conservatives, Nigel Farage for Reform have been sucking up to Donald Trump. Well, that didn't work, did it?
No.
And it's hurt our economy with his tariffs. It's hurt our defence and security the way he's backed Putin and not supported Ukraine properly. And now with this idiotic war in the Middle East, he's hit our businesses, our economy and every family and pensioner in the pocket. You've got to call it as it is, Nick.
So, Ed, you mentioned the Prime Minister. I'm sure you're aware now, shortly after 7 o'clock it was announced he's going down to the Gulf area. Within minutes, I was speaking with the former Foreign Secretary, Conservative MP, Sir James Cleverly. He became quite partisan.
Keir Starmer has got no authority. At the start of this conflict, he was neither supportive of America nor was he critical of the President. He was caught between the two. He, throughout this, has demonstrated a leaden-footedness. He has moved slowly at the last possible minute.
Sir Ed, time to play party politics. Fair from Sir James?
Well, I think what Sir James has got to explain is why Kemi Badenoch and the Conservatives, with James Cleverly, wanted Britain to go to war with America against Iran.
Well, she subsequently said she was only talking about certain sites. You're aware of that now, sir.
Yeah, but she completely changed her position. I think the Conservatives have got no credibility on foreign policy at all. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm very critical of this government and have been, as you know, Nick, yep, on your programme many, many times. And I think the way they have managed the relationship with Donald Trump has not been good for our country. I would have much preferred the approach that people like Mark Carney, the Liberal Prime Minister in Canada, took. I think that's really served the Canadian interest much better. So I'm critical of Keir Starmer, very much so. I'm afraid the Conservatives, though, have not got legs to stand on. Neither is Nigel Farage.
I want to bring Nigel Farage in, if I may, on another point, Sir Ed. He's questioning the wisdom of the ban on Ye or Kanye West, saying we don't necessarily want to be in a country where we don't allow people in because we don't like what they say. Where are you on his, Mr. Farage, has said about the move on Ye or Kanye West?
Well, I'm a strong believer in free speech and defend people's right to free speech all the time. However, look what Kanye West has done. He wrote a song praising Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
I cannot think of anything more anti-Semitic than that. And we have a rising anti-Semitism which is hitting the British Jewish community every day. Many of them live in fear. We have to draw a line. And I'm afraid Nigel Farage doesn't seem to see where that line is. If he's willing to allow people who praise Adolf Hitler coming to our country, well, I'm afraid people will take notice and will realise what sort of man he is.
Last minute or so together, the government said they've taken action over the student loan scandal. Others are saying they're tinkering around the edges as the interest has been capped at double the current rate of inflation. Which way do you see it, Sir Ed?
Oh, totally tinkering. We've got a very clear policy. The point at which you start paying back your loan is the key thing. The Conservatives and Labour have frozen that, dragging lots of graduates on low incomes and middle incomes into paying far more. And it's that point at which you start paying back that's critical, and we've argued that that should be unfrozen, that should be raised. That would bring far more help, far more quickly to graduates who are really faced with the cost of living crisis and higher student repayments.
All right. Lastly, I have a note here that you're in Hull today.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm nervous because Hull is very close, if I've got my geography right, to the Humber, which is a vast body of water. I do trust you're not going to be throwing yourself in off another surfboard.
Well, it's very timely, a bit cold though, so I'll beat it.
I hear you'll be playing chess, Ed.
Yes, Yeah, I used to play chess quite competitively when I was in my younger years. So I love a game of chess, and this came as an option. And basically, I'm going to be party political here, Nick.
Go on.
The Liberal Democrats in Hull have been reviving the parks, making them more interesting, more fun, including allowing people to play chess. Chess sets. So it's all about good local government, community.
Well, I can't let you get too much of a local ad. I'll end with, are you a fan of Petros Defence or the Queen's Gambit? Sir Ed.
Oh, Queen's Gambit is one of my favourites.
What is it? What is that? Is that an aggressive move?
Some people think it is. I like getting my central pawns out quite quickly. Then I can get my knights and bishops out. I like getting my pieces out front. Now, different tactics, you know.
Well, we've talked about enough knights. Sir Ed Davey, Sir James Cleverly, Sir Keir Starmer. I'll end it there. Safe travels. Thank you, Sir Ed Davey, leader of the Lib Dems. 8:43, the Queen's Gambit, a positional solid opening where white offers a pawn to control the centre. I did play it at school. I was probably below average, but I don't remember that. I remember you used to be able to castle, didn't you? When you moved the queen and the castle, what was that, castling or something? Anyway, I don't know. Where's Andrew when you need him? Lee's in Brentwood. Lee, let's talk about Kanye or Ye. Is it a government's role? Good morning.
No, definitely not. Good morning. It's definitely not the government's role. I mean, you know, ultimately, if this guy was despised, they wouldn't have sold tickets, right? I mean, the point is, when does it stop, Nick? This is my question to you. I'm surprised at you. You're an advocate of free speech.
With certain controls, yes.
When does it stop? Yeah, but when does it stop?
Well, I made the point, and I mean, it's a rather glib one, but if Putin decided he wanted to come and play the balalaika, I wouldn't allow him into the country. Kanye West has a pattern of vile anti-Semitic. Not a one-off, not a two-off, a pattern. And that, for me, has crossed the line.
We all know that what he said is repugnant, right? Yeah. There's no dispute with it. Okay,
sure.
So, but he's not a politician. He's not a to do with a religion. He's an artist. Mm-hmm. Now, they should have just simply said to him, "You say one thing that is anti-Semitic on the stage, or within your trip in a public environment, you will be arrested." That puts it to bed.
Can you imagine the uproar if the police suddenly marched on the stage at the Wireless Festival and nicked him?
They wouldn't need to. No, but they wouldn't need to, would they? They'd nick him after.
By then, if you're Jewish and you've gone along to enjoy a day's music, I've never been to the festival, I have no plans, you've been made to feel intimidated. And this is a group of people...
Oh, come on, Nick.
Oh, no,
Nick,
I'm serious.
This has got to stop. This really has got to stop.
What, protecting people in this country?
But it's not a case of protecting. It's protecting their feelings.
Mate, Jewish people have been murdered in this country. Jewish ambulances
have been... When was the last Jewish person that was murdered in this country?
Manchester,
Nick?
Last year, at the synagogue.
And before that?
Oh, well, I don't know, but isn't... What do we need, a record here? I mean, come on, let's be honest about it. Jewish people are attacked on a daily basis. The CST, brackets, I declare an interest, I sit on one of the advisory boards, close brackets, has recorded the highest level of anti-Semitic... You need more people to die, Lee?
We've had MPs murdered. What I'm saying to you is
you're
connecting an artist with mental health issues
I don't buy the mental health issue line, Lee. I appreciate that you and I will agree to disagree on that, but I don't. This is a pattern of behaviour. If I suddenly started screaming the F word now and said it was under stress, and I was, as I said yesterday, and I'm rested for a week, I can't then do it again and say, it doesn't work. Lee, thank you for holding. Have yourself, let's agree to disagree, but disagree to part. Coming up after news, we go back to that interview.
Last month, I spoke to Nick about the need for a formal government apology over the forced adoption scandal. Health Secretary Wes Streeting has responded. I'm Anne Keane. I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show.
And I'm looking forward to that right after this 8:46 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer has welcomed the agreed two-week ceasefire between Iran and the US. As part of the deal, commercial ships will be able to pass through the Strait of Hormuz under Iranian supervision. And Downing Street says the Prime Minister will travel to meet regional leaders in the Gulf today for talks aimed at keeping the vital shipping lane open permanently. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK, some outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a warm day for England and Wales, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Finsbury Park, the Seven Sisters Road remains closed westbound between Stroudgreen Road and Station Place. It's because of the emergency works. All the buses that usually go that way are on diversion. In Regent's Park, Primrose Hill Road and Regent's Park Road both stay closed because of the ongoing investigation. In Hersham, Queen's Road remains closed both ways, and that's also for an investigation. On the train, still no West Coast mainline services running between Euston and Milton Keynes because of the ongoing works. Severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Hayes and Harlington and Reading because of the emergency repairs. And East Midlands Railway services are now running between Luton and Bedford, but with delays for around 20 minutes.
This is LBC.
For those precious, messy mornings that matter, start with heart. A bowl of Yeo Valley Organic Greek-style yoghurt, topped with Yeo Valley Organic tray-baked granola. Proper yoghurt, proper crunch. It's a wholesome, creamy and deliciously nutty breakfast that will keep you going all morning. Yeo Valley Organic. Breakfast made with real heart. Find it now in a store close to you.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Oh, Fiona's back at the monkey safari again. She's hooked on Toyota Service and Aftercare. In fact, it's so good, she'll find any excuse to come back. From replacement wipers to service and MOTs, our perks include free refreshments, quiet workspaces, courtesy cars, and a new warranty with every eligible service. Toyota Service and Aftercare. So good, you'll find any excuse to come back. Eligible services are available until the vehicle turns 10 years old or 100,000 miles. T's and C's apply.
Looking for a new kitchen that you can't wait to come home to? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, from ultra-modern to timeless classics. And options for every budget, with kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. So book your free kitchen design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Continue our conversation about the government's involvement in the decision not to allow Ye or Kanye West into the country. Dinesh in Oxford. Trust you well, Dinesh. Hope everything good with your family. What do you take on this?
Everything's good. Thank you, Nick.
Good, sir. Good to hear.
The previous caller, Lee, it doesn't bother him as long as it doesn't affect him. That's the view I'm getting from the majority of
them. Hang on, I think we've got a slight problem. Oh.
Hello?
Can you hear me? Terrific problem with this microphone. Now, I don't know if that's you or whether we've got real issues here. Hold on a second, Dinesh. We're just going to try and sort something out because all I'm hearing is static. Let's try again. Dinesh, let's try again.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hello.
Yeah. So you were referring to Lee, the previous caller.
Yeah, I think he's representing the majority of the people who don't care about this problem because it doesn't affect them. And it's really saddening. That's not the British way. I would 100% back the government here. They would actually should go ahead and actually ban the others like NECAP and Bob Villain, whatever he is standing for. Mm-hmm. I'm also concerned that Yeezy, the horrible brand. Well, also, Lee, I want to mention one point. Lee mentioned Kanye West is an artist and a bipolar. He's neither. I don't think he's either an artist.
Well, he is an artist. I mean, he has sold millions of records, so it might not be to your taste, but he is an artist.
No, I understand. Okay, it's subjective. I agree. It's a subjective thing. Mm. Now, Yeezy as a brand has made 1.7 billion profit for Adidas, and it's still being sold in Sports Direct and JD Sports. I would say this is a call for action to say let's start boycotting that and going ahead, because this is absolutely horrendous. We see Palestinian protesters going into shops and picking up random stuff for virtual signal. This is not happening, and absolutely this is the right decision. Anti-Semitic is not the way. It's not fashionable, even if TikTok says so. And this is 100% the right way to do it.
Dinesh, thank you for that. Sorry about the bounciness we had on your line. Have yourself a good day. Best wishes to your family. 8:52. Now, let's go to other stories. And if you've listened to me, well, I've had the privilege of doing this job for quite a few years, but I've been in and around journalism for 40-odd years. And when you consider my late father was in it before, and I've told you before how he ran a press agency from the front room, I've been in it all my life because I used to answer the phones. So it takes something for a story to come along that makes my jaw drop. But that happened last month when I spoke with the former Labour MP and Minister Anne Keane about the so-called forced adoption scandal, which affected, it's thought, around 215,000 births or mums. This is a little what Anne told me.
There was always a fear of being treated badly, because the only thing was you were unmarried. When I gave birth, I was given nothing for pain. I was told I would remember the pain and wouldn't be a bad girl again. I then asked to see my son. She came back and she said, you can have him for 10 days, but don't get too close. Well, I don't know how you do that. And on the eighth day, I went to collect him from the nursery, and he wasn't there. And they said, oh, no, you're getting far too close. He's in that building over there, and his new mummy's coming for him soon, and you'll never see him again.
What would an apology mean, Anne? What do you think they need to do?
I don't know how to express it. It would mean I was almost being pardoned for something that I didn't do. It would mean the world to me. It would help me heal.
Shockingly, this practice went on until 1976, and I said to Anne Keane at the time that I would take it up with anybody who could be relevant, could assist us, one of whom, of course, was the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting. Anne kindly sent in a question to Mr. Streeting calling for an official apology. This was the Health Secretary's response yesterday.
I do think the British state has to answer for this, and in terms of there being a formal apology, that would be a really big moment. I think it's a moment whose time has come, and I've seen what the Prime Minister has said publicly. I think he recognises this, and it's not for me to make announcements on something as serious and important and grave as this, but I don't think the Prime Minister will need any persuading from me, so watch this space.
Let's go back to Anne Keane. Morning, Anne. What do you take from yesterday?
Good morning, Nick. I'm so grateful. We're all very grateful that you asked him this question and gave me the opportunity to do so. I think it's a major step forward. Mm. We're already, we've already, as I said, I think, knocked at the door. We've been allowed in, and now we're sitting around the table, which is such a contrast from when Harriet Harman did the joint report on human rights, which, sad to say, the previous government wouldn't do an apology. So we're so used to being rejected in every way we can. So this is such a major improvement. And the Bridget Phillipson has responsibility for education and families, and also Helen Hayes was just, her committee was just exceptional.
You reminding listeners, of course, you work closely with former Prime Minister Gordon Brown. I don't think Mr. Streeting would have gone as far as he did without knowing that there are somehow the wheels of machinery are grinding into gear here for the PM.
Yes, they are. We believe that. And we've waited so long. And, you know, our ages are...
No, I know. I know.
Are older. But also for the adoptees, the children.
Yeah.
They need... you know, they had their identity taken. It's a really difficult issue.
So what can I do next? It's either I'm just left now with Bridget Phillipson, Education Secretary, or the PM, Sir Keir Basie. That's all the only other two I can go to, isn't it, Anne?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
If you can.
Of course
but,
I can.
We are so happy that you're doing this with us.
Oh, don't worry
about it. It makes us feel really valued.
Well, you are valued. And as I think you probably know, as I said earlier, I've been around this game for decades. My jaw dropped when I spoke with you. It's an interview I shall never forget. And I give you my word again, as soon as I get Bridget Phillipson, or if I manage to get Sakir, that question will be on my agenda for them, Anne.
Oh, thank you so much, Nick.
We'll talk again. I guarantee it, because I know I'll get Bridget Phillipson. Not sure if I'll get the PM soon. Anne Keane, thank you. Former Labour MP and Minister forced, along with around 215,000 other mums, because of the shame of being an unmarried mother or a young mum or a teenage mum. And it ran from 1949, from memory, yes, 1949 to 1976 in this country, as recently as 1976. I know for some of you that seems like another age. All right, maybe it's not just out of snow, wasn't I? I was still in school, but, oh, God. All right, 3 to 9 is the time. Let's get one call in, one more call at least. Melanie in Ramsbottom wants to talk about the government's involvement in the decision on Kanye West. Right or wrong for the government to call it this way? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Absolutely right on this occasion. I'm not in favour of big states. I'm not in favour of government intervention normally, but I think it's time in this country that we actually drew a line in the sand and made clear what is and isn't acceptable to British culture and British values. And Kanye West is clearly not acceptable and not compatible with what we should stand for in this country.
I'm with you, but I have to put you the line, come on, he's only here performing, singing songs, he's not giving speeches on a platform, he's not holding rallies, let him sing, is what many would say, Melanie.
Well, I think it's wider than Kanye West, to be honest, Nick. I think that, you know, our culture in this country is in a tailspin downwards. We are plummeting new depths on a daily basis. And Kanye West is a really good example of where we as a country should stand up and say, no more. And it's not just about him. What about the organisers of the festival? What on earth were they thinking of? What about the people who bought the tickets? What were they thinking of? It's time to send a message that says this is not an acceptable direction of travel for this country. We expect more.
Melanie, thank you for that. I'm sorry if you're unable to get through. Many of you still want to have your say, but we have reached. Thank you, Melanie. Music means we have to move on. And we move on by going back to the first hour of this show. Within minutes of it being announced that Keir Starmer was going down to the Gulf, I was speaking with Senior Conservative MP, now Shadow Housing Secretary, Sir James Cleverly. But did he play the man and not the ball over that trip?
He, throughout this, has demonstrated a leaden-footedness. He has moved slowly at the last possible minute.
Plus, the minister who says we're turning the tide on shoplifting. Well, they are nicking more people, but shoplifting surely is increasing. What's the reality as you see it? And how much interest is there for those students with the capping of the interest rate on those loans? Those stories and more after the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, Sakir Starmer has welcomed the agreed two-week ceasefire between Iran and the United States. President Trump announced the truce just 90 minutes before his deadline last night for Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. As part of the deal, commercial ships will be able to pass through the waterway under Iranian supervision. The Liberal Democrat leader, Sir Ed Davey, has told Nick Donald Trump is claiming a hollow victory for a war that he started.
I've always valued the relationship between the UK and the US. It is really, really important. The problem is, if the facts change, you have to change your approach. And with Trump in the White House, he's insulted our troops, he's insulted our country, he's created this idiotic war which has damaged the Middle East, damaged the United States, and damaged our country. You know, go and look at the price people are paying for their petrol and their diesel. That's thanks to Donald Trump.
Downing Street says the Prime Minister is travelling to meet regional leaders in the Gulf today. Sakir will hold talks aimed at keeping the Strait of Hormuz open permanently. There's been a fall in global oil prices following the announcement overnight. Brent crude is currently trading at around $92 a barrel, but prices remain above pre-war levels. A government minister has denied the docking of HMS Dragon in the eastern Mediterranean is embarrassing for the UK. Defence officials insist that the warship can still sail at short notice despite undergoing routine maintenance. It was dispatched on the 10th of March to protect Britain's bases in Cyprus. Policing Minister Sarah Jones has told Nick it's wrong to suggest the UK has no
presence in defence efforts in the Middle East.
We have been there with those Typhoons jets since the war started 5.5 weeks ago. We are working in a real leadership role to bring together those 40 countries who are working really hard on how we open up the straits, get back to normal. These things obviously are very complex and very difficult, but it is wrong to say that we do not have a presence there, because we absolutely do.
A 21-year-old man's died after being stabbed at the Primrose Hill viewpoint in North London. A second man was found nearby with stab wounds yesterday. No arrests have been made. Public opposition to resident doctor strikes in England appears to be growing, according to a new survey. YouGov says around 55% of people don't support the industrial action being taken by the medics this week. In April, just 33% were against it. And Arsenal have the advantage in their Champions League quarter-final after a 1-0 win at Sporting Lisbon last night. Harry Kane was on target for Bayern Munich as they beat Real Madrid 2-1 in Spain. In the City, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up 265 at 10,611. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest through the day. A very warm day as well. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine, Wednesday, April the 8th, coming up in this hour, tackling the man and not the ball. The allegations made to Sir James Cleverly, who, responding just minutes after hearing the Prime Minister's Keir Starmer was down to the Gulf, really did go on a partisan ground. How appropriate was that? And how are Iranians here in this country, particularly the Iranian community in London, as we just got back from the brink, how are they waking up with that news as they have their breakfast and their morning coffees this morning? We'll have a live report on that. Tackling shoplifting. Well, the government says they are. Policing Minister Sarah Jones.
I talk to retailers where they say that sometimes they don't report it. So I want them to report it.
They're saying that the number of charges are up, but so is shoplifting. What is the reality as you see it in our supermarkets, stores and shops? And then later in the hour, they've been university challenged with those student loans, but will the moans end with the new government action, or is it merely, quotes, tinkering around the edges, as opponents are claiming?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The world's prayers answered to whichever God you pray to. Back from the brink, not quite minutes to spare, but it got damn close. This with human shields, mums and children gathering on bridges and power plants in and around Iran. But we now have a 14-day ceasefire, stay of execution, some might say, and yet more bafflement and considerable concern over exactly what's emanating from the White House. But let's get away from the White House, let's get away from Iran, let's get away from the Gulf. Let's come to the UK, let's come to London. And what are Iranians who live here, high numbers of them living in a part of North London called Finchley, did they sleep last night? How did they wake up this morning? Are they in contact with any of their relatives? LBC's reporter Helen Hodnott joins me from Finchley. Helen, morning, what do you got?
Morning, Nick. There are around 114,000 Iranian-born people living in the UK. Many are in London, with this part of Finchley affectionately nicknamed Little Tehran, with its roads lined with Persian shops, cafes and restaurants. The last 6 weeks have been a roller coaster for people here. Many hopeful of lasting change back home, but then increasingly scared for their loved ones in Iran as the threat threats and rhetoric have piled up, peaking yesterday with Donald Trump's claim that a whole civilization will die tonight. People here opening shops this morning, or in the case of the second person you'll hear from baking bread in front of a roaring oven, told me their reaction to the tense developments.
I'm not happy about the Iran stopping war with the America. They will be powerful again and again attack, same as before, 7 months ago.
So you think after 2 weeks there will be more bombing?
Even it's not bombing after 2 weeks, maybe after 6 months, 5 months, 1 year. Again, this happened, in my opinion. I'm more worried about my country. Really, most important for me is my country, after my family.
We are alone. We need help, America and Israel, for change regime. Iranian Islamic regime in Iran, very dictator. They killed 4,000 younger people in 2 days in Iran. We need help.
What do you make of the developments overnight?
I guess that this was in the card all along. About 100,000 people got killed. Young people from middle class, upper class people are educated. About 650,000 people have been arrested in Iran. They don't publicize it. However, Trump is a businessman.
So what do you think will happen after the 2 weeks?
They're going to basically sign a document, a declaration. You're not going to create atomic bomb.
Trump says it was a victory, what was decided, the ceasefire. But do you think it was a capitulation by him? Do you think it was him giving in?
Yes, because you cannot trust what he says.
The people of Little Tehran, Finchley in North London, speaking with LBC's Helen Hoddenott. Now, earlier in the show, minutes after it was announced that Sir Keir Starmer was going to the Gulf, I was speaking with the Shadow Housing Secretary and former Foreign Secretary, Senior Conservative Sir James Cleverly. Many of you were not impressed, by the way. Mark, that interview was not an interview. It was crass and low-ball dog-whistle politics from start to finish. Tim, this gaslighting from James Cleverly is unreal. Complete revision of history on what Kimmy Badenoch's position was. John, he's not very clever, Cleverly, is he? Does he not realise what his Conservative government have done? Well, here's a little of what he said to attract your ire.
Keir Starmer has got no authority. At the start of this conflict, he was neither supportive of America nor was he critical of the president. He was caught between the two. He, throughout this, has demonstrated a leaden-footedness. He has moved slowly at the last possible minute. He didn't prepare properly for defence of our
nation.
He's
in the Gulf today, Sir James.
Good. Day late and a dollar short. So after a ceasefire has been announced, after we've had weeks of criticism, and I've received this from my friends and contacts in the Gulf about that, yeah, they feel that we weren't defending our own interests in their country. Keir Starmer has played this badly from the start, and this attempt to retrofit some kind of credibility by rushing off to the Gulf after a ceasefire has been announced is, as I say, far, far too little, far too late.
Is this the time to play party politics? Well, I had an opportunity to go to another political party leader, the Lib Dems, Sir Ed Davey.
I think what Sir James has got to explain is why Kemi Badenoch and the Conservatives, with James Cleverly, wanted Britain to go to war with America against Iran.
Well, she subsequently said she was only talking about certain sites. You're aware of that now, sir.
Yeah, but she completely changed her position. I think the Conservatives have got no credibility on foreign policy at all. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm very critical of this government and have been, as you know, Nick, yep, on your programme many, many times. And I think the way they have managed the relationship with Donald Trump has not been good for our country. I would have much preferred the approach that people like Mark Carney, the Liberal Prime Minister in Canada, took. I think that's really served the Canadian interest much better. So I'm critical of Keir Starmer, very much so. I'm afraid the Conservatives, though, have not got legs to stand on. Neither is Nigel Farage.
Well, let's bring in a Labour MP now. Calvin Bailey is Labour MP for Leighton and Wanstead, but also served in the military, former wing commander with 24 years of service, flew into Iraq with invading forces in 2003 and joins me now. Privileged to have you on, Mr. Bailey. Your reaction to the political biff and bat, we'll start with that if we may. What do you make of that? Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks very much for having me on. It's very disappointing at a moment of major international crisis for people to try and seek political gains at moments like this. It's the position that our nation and the world has been in with the kind of despicable rhetoric that we heard from the president is a moment for us as nations to remind ourselves of what is acceptable rhetoric and what is good and decent behaviour. And we have a place to play in how the world moves forward. And what we should not be seeking to do is to rewrite history as Sir James has, or to seek to gain political advantage from it, especially when that is a revisionist recollection of what he and his party proposed at the start of this conflict.
As a military bloke, Mr. Bailey, or wing commander, do you think there was effectively 12, 14 years of stripping the MOD budget bare?
Well, entirely, and what would be legitimate for us to be having for political leaders to be having, what I'd love to hear from Sir James and his party is, we recognise that in 2010 we took nearly $2 billion out of defence, that we did not invest. In fact, we chose in 2011 to disinvest ourselves in the ability to repair and replenish our ships, and that the consequences of those risks that the Cameron government took at that moment are being played out now, and they should take some responsibility for that, and they should add weight to the credible claims and needs to put pressure on the government to address those gaps at this critical moment of time.
But again, without becoming too party political, some would say that your party has, well, 18 months, if not a little bit longer. You had an SDR, Strategic Defence Review. They would argue you, your government, your party, should be doing more sooner.
And I agree. And I think what we have seen here is that those risks that were there, and there will be others, have come to pass. And if we are going to move forward, if we are going to be able to gain the social capital from our public to say, look, this is why we have been trying to explain about why we need...
Can you
invest in infrastructure, and then we need to do that in a way that the public understands and that is honest. You know, the fact that we have got Dragon, only Dragon, out in the Middle East at the moment should be a genuine, as we would say in the military, a question for moment, the chance to say, well, hang on, is that where we should be as a nation?
You probably don't know this, but Dragon's actually tied up. It needs repairs somewhere in the Eastern Med. You may not be aware of that, actually, Mr. Bailey.
No, I am aware of that. Yeah. And you know, some of this, I mean, one of the important things that's probably not at the forefront of discussions, like sustaining an operation like this is incredibly intensive and costly. And the US will be taking a knee at this moment as well, because, you know, air campaigns aren't designed to be continuous operations. Now, Dragon and there are other maritime forces out in the Eastern Mediterranean. There is a standing NATO maritime task group that is out in the Middle East, the Eastern Mediterranean, that provides security and support. And so when the Defence Secretary was saying that we are doing this alongside our allies, we are legitimately doing it on alongside our allies. Right. And to diminish that standing NATO maritime task group, but again, is kind of akin to what Mr. Trump has done to our forces.
Sorry to talk over you, sir. Final question, if I may. You're a military bloke, so you're a realist. Realistically, what can Sir Keir hope to achieve in the Gulf today?
Well, I think what's really important is consequence management. It's to go back to our partners, and let's be clear. They asked us for assistance, and we gave that assistance. There are countries like Qatar that would have been Iranian. These are, like, Qatar is an Iranian-aligned country that was attacked by Iran, they will at this moment be saying, right, who are our friends? And they would have seen that the UK has sent Typhoon aircraft out there and shown regional leadership. And those countries now will be trying to work out how they pull together to address the security problem that exists in the Strait of Hormuz. And the UK will be critical in that, in the way that it has been critical in the creation of an alliance within the GCC over the past couple of months.
Mr. Bailey, I've enjoyed our conversation. I hope we speak again soon. Thank you. Calvin Bailey is a Labour MP for Leighton and Wanstead and has particular experience in this area because he served as a wing commander, 24 years of service there, and took part in the Iraq invasion in 2003. So definitely a man worth listening to. Peter, we're going to listen to your view on that. And also, what is the reality? Coming back home, what is the reality when you go down to your supermarket or to your stores concerns shop theft?
Under the previous government, theft under £200 wasn't investigated by the police. That is completely unacceptable. We are changing that, so every theft needs to be investigated.
Policing Minister and Labour MP Sarah Jones speaking within the first hour of the show, but is that the reality as you see it? Surely, unfortunately, shop theft, shoplifting continues to soar. We'll come to that after this as well. Just hit 9:17, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says today is a big day for peace after the United States and Iran agreed on a 2-week ceasefire. The agreement will also see ships allowed to travel through the Strait of Hormuz under control of the Iranian military. And Keir Starmer is to travel to the Gulf today for talks aimed at keeping the vital shipping lane open permanently. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Tomorrow breaks of rain in the northwest. A very warm day for England and Wales. A high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4's very busy westbound Junction 7 at Slough West. It's because a car's broken down. And there are lengthy delays on the M1 northbound to Junction 12 at Flitwick. It's because of an accident and only one lane is open. In Finsbury Park, the Seven Sisters Road remains closed westbound between Stroud Green Road and Station Place. It's because of emergency works. In Regent's Park, Primrose Hill and Regent's Park Road are both closed because of an ongoing investigation. On the trains, Avanti West Coast and London Northwestern remain suspended between Milton Keynes and Euston because of the ongoing works. Severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Hayes and Harlington and Reading, and delays of about 50 minutes on East Midlands Railway and Thames Link services between Luton and Bedford.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
2, 1, 0% APR on all electric Mini Cooper. What was that, Luton? Handling is extraordinary. Centre of gravity so low. And it could be ours with a 15% deposit and 3-year term. Okay, Luton, reroute me to the nearest Mini retailer now.
Land a new all-electric Mini Cooper with 0% APR. Report to your Mini retailer today. Mini UK is a credit broker. Ordered and delivered by 30th of June. PCP finance with Mini Financial Services. Subject to status. 18 plus. T's and C's apply. Mini.co.uk/Cooper.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1. Or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
People ask me, what's my good place? Down the park, having fun with Toby, my cockapoo. And knowing that my pension with PensionBee is managed by experienced money managers. So, not chasing the stick then, Toby? No.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to PensionBee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Just take a slight diversion. Peter, I'm going to come to you to talk about whether Sir James Cleverley is guilty of playing the political man and not the ball. but I'm fascinated by... We did, in the previous hour, we did a report from Sundridge, which is, unfortunately, the site of another invasion by illegal travellers. We have respect, of course, to the travelling community, but illegal travellers who, over this weekend, it would appear, brought in a load of hardcore... I think they might have purchased the field, brought in a load of hardcore... tarmacked over it, if that's the expression, and then put in some mobile homes. Sevenoaks District Council says they're visiting regularly and monitoring the situation. Well, let's hope they take some biscuits and sit down and have a good chat. Now, what interests me is the number of people who are telling me stories about this, and all of them are saying, please keep my name, please keep anonymous. There is a real fear of these illegal travellers, isn't there? You're even suggesting there's a fear on part of the police. I'm just going to do two at random. Obviously, I can't give their names. These problems with the traveller sites are happening all over Basildon and Wickford in Essex. They're buying plots of greenbelt land. They've always been refused planning. As soon as Labour have got in charge, they've agreed planning to allow one or two chalet-style static homes. And then all of a sudden, 40 mobile homes turn up. And the council in Basildon say they're powerless to do anything about it. The problem is getting out of hand. And I think Labour councils are to blame here. And then I take you to Kent, and again, I can't say this person's name, and of course I respect... This has been going on for years in the area of Erith and Thamesmead. There are fields there where they all tie up with their caravans and their horses. The council and the police try to move them on. I think they're frightened of them. How are these people allowed to continue like this? Yours. I can't say your name. What is it that these people have this on? There are others. I mean, I don't normally read out anonymous emails, unless, of course, you know, you're a serving police officer or military or whatever it might be. But there is something there, isn't there? Now, let's come back to Sir James Cleverly. Too political? Dave says, Sir James, what a joke this country is, rewarding failure with honours. Luke in Greenwich, the interview with James Cleverly is pathetic and what is wrong with politics. Shows an immaturity fit for a teenager. It makes me cringe that an adult, let alone a politician, would behave like this. I'm not a fan of Starmer's, but I'm also not a child, so I can see expert diplomacy and maturity. Peter's in Stirling. Your reaction to what you heard from Sir James or what you're watching with Sir Keir? A couple of nights.
Good morning, Nick. Honestly, I mean, I watched James Cleverly and it was just underlined. I mean, I've looked at Kemi's responses throughout this whole conflict. Mm-hmm. The Conservatives are just operating in a different world, aren't they? They should be fighting for their very survival right now, and they're just, I don't know what planet they're on. I mean,
I would say is Kemi Badenoch is the least unpopular of the party leaders. Now, I'm not saying she's the most popular. When she comes in at, I think, from memory, about minus 12, Sakira's at minus 41. So I'm not saying she's popular, but she's the least unpopular. So does that tell us anything?
I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. I mean, I think Keir Starmer, I don't know what he could do. He's going to be gone. He won't make it to the end of the year. He'll probably be gone after May.
I would have thought, yeah.
Looking at every single opinion poll about this conflict, and then looking at Kemi Badenoch trying to walk back her comments, you know, which was saying about, like, we need to stop just catching the arrows and shoot the archer or something.
Yeah. And then talked about specific sites in Iran, but then rode back from that as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's talking about flip-flop. I mean, we rightly bashed Starmer and all of the U-turns from the Labour government, but the Conservatives are just a bad...
What did Sir James need to say today, do you think? I mean, obviously, we don't accept him to extol the virtues of the PM. I understand that. But surely, you know, for the sake of this country, it is to be hoped that Sir Keir can make some headway. I haven't seen it so far, but let's hope it changes. Something like that is probably what we needed here, isn't it?
I would have liked it if he had actually done a bit more like what Ed Davey had done, which is not really going for any partisan political bashing, but actually lay out what Conservatives think the UK government should be doing, laying out in the statement and talking about our future relationship with the US and with the Gulf states. Don't talk about Starmer. Don't talk about the UK government and going, trying to score political points. Lay out a statesman-like statement and approach and strategy. And I didn't get any of that from Cleverly.
Really enjoyed talking with you, Peter. Thank you. Lee, you are brave enough to talk about travellers, and you will in just a minute or two. But I have got a police commissioner hanging on the line who I must go to first. Lee, I will come to you after that. And the police commissioner is response to the first hour of the show. The policing minister saying the government is holding back shoplifting after the number of thieves brought to justice has shot up. The Home Office said the number of criminal charges for shop thefts, I much prefer that to shoplifting, it somehow rather trivialises it to me, rising by more than 20% in the last year. This is a little of what she told me.
The increase was very significant in the last 2 years of the last government. The increase is still going up, you're right, but it's going up by less than it was.
It's up by 5% to 519,381, which, you are right, prior to that it was at 8% rise. So yes. you are still rising.
So the curve is going in the right direction, but we need it to go down like knife crime. So you're absolutely right. Just a caveat to that, which I know doesn't help my case, but we do want people to report this crime. It is not acceptable that it happens, and I talk to retailers where they say that sometimes they don't report it. So I want them to report it. So on that sense, I want the numbers to go up because I want every single crime to be reported.
So if you go looking for something, you're going to find more of it, obviously. That's a fact of human nature.
And we are changing the law in two ways. One, to introduce an offence of assault against a shop worker, because that happens a lot and it's completely unacceptable, and the government needs to be very loud and clear about that. And secondly, under the previous government, theft under £200 wasn't investigated by the police. That is completely unacceptable. We are changing that, so every theft needs to be investigated. Now, you need police to do that, and that is why we are shifting police into our neighbourhoods, so they are there to tackle the epidemic of everyday crime, like shoplifting.
Right. Spare a thought for those coppers. They're sent everywhere, aren't they? Katie Bourne, Conservative Police and Crime Commissioner for Sussex, National Lead for Business and Retail Crime. Well, hearing that the convictions are up, but so are the number of offences. What is the reality as you and other commissioners see it across the country? Commissioner, good morning.
Good morning to you. Well, there was a lot of spin going on there. And if you speak to retailers and members
that
of the public,
surprises
as I
me, Katie.
Well, there you go. We're not seeing that much change on the ground at the moment. So there was some great work started under the previous Conservative government. And you are starting to see retailers reporting more, which is fantastic. But some of the stuff the minister was saying is really spin. You know, talking about this £200 level, saying that theft was not investigated, people were admitting guilt, so the theft didn't have to be investigated because the person would admit the guilt in the first place. So that's an irrelevance.
What would happen to them then, Commissioner? A fine or just a crime would be
noted?
Well,
they would just get a fine. They would just get a fine. And the idea it was brought in was because magistrates' courts were so backed up. And so it was to try and keep the courts clear for other crimes. So if somebody admitted a crime, they'd get a fine through the post. But as we know, prolific shop thieves need their behaviours changed, and they need a really meaningful deterrent. And the best deterrent is always prison, because that's the one that people really fear. But as we know, our prisons are chocker at the moment. And so with prisons, you know, overcrowding, if you've got less than a year on your sentence, you're not going to go to prison. And that is the majority of your prolific shoplifters. So actually, problems are coming down the line.
What level of hope do you give this new government initiative? What do you think it might achieve?
not a great deal, if I'm really honest, because I attend the policing ministers' forums, and the retailers sit round the table, and they're not happy. They are happy with the work that we started with Pegasus, the partnership, looking at the organised crime gangs, and that's nearly 2 years old now, the operational side of that under Opal, and there are some really good results getting the crime gangs. But we're talking about the prolific individuals who go in time and time again in the high streets, and we see them every day. And for me, just saying, well, you know, we're getting more reports in, and we've got more out-of-court disposals happening, and therefore we're solving more. Are those out-of-court disposals actually meaningful? So people aren't going to prison, but what they're being referred into, is it actually working and changing behaviours? And that's where I think the issues are going to come.
Katie Bourne is Conservative Police and Crime Commissioner of Sussex and the National Lead for Business and Retail Crime. What is the reality as you see it? We're going to be a minute late to the news. I apologise, but I have got someone at last who's prepared to talk about the problem of these illegal travellers. Lee in Raynham. Thank you. I've got so many people sending emails and notes not prepared to actually come on the radio. What are you going to tell me, sir? Good morning.
Well, first of all, Nick, I'd like to congratulate you on your marriage. Everybody should be married. Nobody should be happy all their life.
Thank you. I give it till Christmas. I give it till Christmas.
Now. No, we had. I live in a semi-rural environment, and there was a field that was bought by a family of travellers. Mm-hmm. This was going back 4 or 5 years ago. They always do it this time of year because they know that they have a 4-day window where virtually the whole country comes to a standstill. So On the Thursday evening, I was travelling home from work. There was like maybe half a dozen diggers there. They completely and utterly cleared all the ground. Saturday morning, there was about seven or eight hardcore lorries that turned up. Saturday afternoon, they had the tarmac down, and by Monday evening, literally, they had all the caravans installed on there, about 15 to 20 caravans. Well, not caravans, but these big mobile-type homes.
Yeah, I know the sort.
And it took the council until the Tuesday, Wednesday, before they made their first site visit. Now, I've got friends that are in the police force, and they've told me on numerous occasions, if we turn up with one or two officers, there are 20 travellers and two or three police officers. Mm-hmm. So their job is to intimidate us. Mm-hmm. If we turn up with 20 police officers, they then accuse us of intimidating them. So there's never a happy medium between the two. Now, this site was allowed to remain for around about 2.5 years until eventually they were taken to court and they were told to present the land back to its original state, which is how it is now. And it's basically just being left derelict now.
So they didn't return it to its natural state.
They sort of did because it was pretty much like that before.
How near are you to... Was it Craze Hill? There was a famous encampment there, illegal travelling...
Yes. Yeah, there was.
Are you near there?
No. That's... I'm in Raynham in Kent.
Oh, you're in Kent. I'm sorry. I thought you were in Essex. My apologies. You're in Raynham, Kent. I see. Right. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for... It was Dale Farm, I'm told. Dale Farm in Basildon. I thought it was somewhere called Craze Hill. Dale Farm. Lee, I've got to go. Thank you for holding Raynham in Kent. There's also Raynham in Essex, and it's Dale Farm, which, of course, was that famous standoff between the police. Right. We'll take more calls than that. People are now being prepared to call, which is good news, and we will after the news. See if the government action has done enough about the justifiable student moans about those student loans. 9:33, Breakfast with Nick Ferrari on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Donald Trump says today's a big day for peace after the US and Iran agreed on a two-week ceasefire. The US president announced the truce just 90 minutes before his deadline last night for the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. As part of the deal, commercial ships will be able to pass through the strait under Iranian supervision. Downing Street says Sir Keir Starmer is travelling to the Gulf today to discuss efforts to support the ceasefire and keep the strait open permanently. Oil prices have fallen sharply and stock markets in Asia have risen in response to the ceasefire. The price of Brent crude has dropped around 13% and is currently trading at around $92 a barrel. In other news this morning, a British-American woman is due to be sentenced in LA in connection with the death of Matthew Perry. Jasveen Sanger faces up to 65 years in prison after admitting supplying the drugs that killed the Friends actor in 2023. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK, some outbreaks of rain for the northwest, a very warm day in parts, a high of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
Spire Healthcare gave me my life back.
I couldn't speak highly enough for them.
At Spire Healthcare, you can see a leading medical expert privately in as little as 48 hours, so you can get back to what you love sooner.
Spire Healthcare have given me a whole new lease of life.
The care I received was incredible,
and now I feel unbreakable again.
The sooner you're better, the better. Search Spire Healthcare today.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Caterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
It's hard to concentrate when you can't shake a health worry. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
If something's playing on your mind, AXA Health support line nurses and counsellors are ready to listen day or night. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. 24/7 health support line available to all members. Treatment for pre-existing conditions is not covered.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk a little bit more about these illegal travellers arriving. This comes in from... Some of you are now prepared to give us the stories. We go to Kent, Sutton-at-Hone, which is near Dartford. Peter says this happened in Sutton-at-Hone many years ago. The police and council did nothing. There are now about 8 large mobile homes on this site, all illegal. This one comes in from Len. Oh, again, also... I can tell you about places in Kent where these illegal travellers come. They are very aggressive towards police officers. It seems the police are frightened when they finally manage to move them on. In some instances, they just left burnt-out trucks and all sorts of rubbish. It is appalling, and more needs to be done. All right, and on the subject of shop theft, so we're hearing from the government that the number of charges and therefore convictions is up, which is obviously a good thing, but unfortunately the number of cases appears to be up as well. That is the reality, a 5% increase over the last year, down from the previous Conservatives. They came in at 8%, but still going in the wrong direction. Gary says, I was in a branch of Holland and Barrett with my son. Two men walked in, both holding large camping rucksacks, filled them with supplements and just walked out calmly. The manager asked them to stop, but I can't blame her for not trying to stop them physically. Same subject, this comes from Nathan O'Connor. The audacity of that police commissioner. She claims the politician is spinning. The police don't even turn up to shoplifting and burglary matters. We might return to that. But in the previous hour, we talked a lot about the student loans and the fact that it would appear, that in the government's view anyway, they are trying to do something about this. But now they stand accused of only tinkering around the edges after capping interest paid on student loans. It still comes in at double the current rate of inflation. Now, this follows months of pressure and indeed campaigning, the government finally agreeing to introduce a 6% cap on the interest graduates pay on what are called the Plan 2 and Plan 3 student loans. Now, if you're listening and you took one out, your Plan 2 was between 2012 and 2023. They've now charged interest at RPI, Retail Price Index Inflation, plus 3% when you earn virtually £29,500. That means currently you're paying 6.2%. Now, the government said they will take action. And it was outlined in brief, a little bit, by Jackie, now Baroness Smith, the Skills Minister.
The maximum interest rate that you will pay from next September to the August next year will be 6%. That's a temporary way of alleviating the potential stress on graduates of not knowing what the impact of the war in the Middle East will be on the interest rate that they have to pay.
In the first hour, I had the pleasure of speaking with George Holmes. Now, George studied economics at the University of Sheffield. He left in 2019, so he had a Plan 2 loan. He told me about the debt. He laid out the figures, the debt he has accrued since graduation.
I borrowed 3 lots of the £9,000. I didn't take a maintenance loan, so I was very fortunate in that position. So I graduated with £27,000 worth of debt, but actually it was accruing interest at RPI plus 3% from my very first lecture. So when I actually graduated, it was about £30,500 in 2019, yeah. And then ever since then, Nick, I've been working at a large aerospace company for 6 years. I've been paying it back, and I still owe exactly the same £30,500, despite paying back around £200 a month at the moment. I think it's really positive that they're looking at the interest rate, and I give them credit for that. It's been as high as 8% in 2024, August, when inflation last spiked. So it's been really, really high. I think still 6% is too high, if I'm completely honest. I think it needs to come down further than that. 6% is more than you would pay on a mortgage if you went to buy a car, anything like that. We personally think it should be around CPI. You know, this is a educational loan to train out doctors and nurses. It shouldn't be 6%. It shouldn't be as high as 8%. And it shouldn't be that while you're studying. It's ridiculous that it's so high. I've worked at a very good company since I graduated. Very lucky for that. I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't gone to university. My parents didn't go to university. So I'm glad that I went. The interest rate and the paying it back is really, really difficult. I personally would still have gone, but it's not necessarily the right decision for everyone. But I don't want to discourage young people from going to university. I had an incredible 3 years. You know, it's a fantastic privilege and it is paying dividends for me. But paying RPI plus 3% on that loan for the next 30 years is very, very difficult.
How can any government, Conservative or Labour, in all good conscience, make money out of our students? Why on earth? Why are we charging an extra? This is ridiculous. Because as Mr. Holmes just said, George Holmes just said, if we want doctors and engineers and, I don't know, airline pilots and solicitors or whatever else we know. Perhaps we don't need too many solicitors in all honesty, we don't need too many lawyers. But if we need others, journalists, radio presenters, why would you seek to make money out of them? If you've been affected or possibly your son or daughter's been affected. And the other thing is, not in every instance, but in many instances, this poor generation come out, there aren't any jobs to have anyway. They went through COVID, they've got all the qualifications they've been told to do, they come out and the job market is so desperately tight. All right, they have limited it, but isn't it interesting, when it comes to the doctors, they're happy to do RPI, but when it comes to the students, it's CPI, if I've got that the right way around. Let me just check that, that's actually... Yeah, RPI, I'm so sorry, RPI for the students, which is the higher one, CPI for the doctors when they seek to negotiate with them, which seems rather strange, because if they use CPI for the students, that would help them out rather than the RPI, which is typically a higher rate of inflation. We might pick up on that, but it's Travellers at Last that has got you talking. John's in Coventry. John, what can you tell us about the illegal travellers? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm grand, thank you. What are you going to tell me about Coventry? Are you a Coventry fan?
Oh, yes. Going
were you there?
This weekend, mate, when we beat the Owls at us, with goal difference, is going to send us catastrophically into the First Division. Premier League, sorry. Catastrophic.
Yeah. You're a fan, obviously, a team like mine at Leicester City. You know it's all ups and downs for these clubs. Ups and downs.
Well, it's only up for Coventry, isn't
good
it?
Luck to you. Good luck to you. Well done. Well done. I think Lampard's a great man. He's a great bloke. Good luck to the bloke. Well done.
He's done good things.
Yes. Yeah. Right, let's talk about this issue with illegal travellers, John. What you got?
Well, we live at a nice sort of rural country canal basin, and it's great, and you get lovely people who have brightly painted boats turning up.
Sounds fun.
And it's just been taken over in the past 2 years by a complete sort of... I don't know, just ungovernable demographic. The CRT, is the Canal and Riverside Trust, apparently don't have the funds to deal with it, and the police say it's not their jurisdiction, but people are camping out there, making fires, you know.
Sorry, when you say camping, are they in caravans, are they in mobile homes, are they in tents? Talk a little bit about what they live in.
Oh, mobile homes. So it's mobile homes and basically rough sleeping as well. So there's been a few rough sleepers around here, but the area... It's now becoming a magnet because they've understood there's no penalty, there's no comeback, and even if they do get, a custodial sentence, like you just said, if it's under a year, they're not going to go to prison, are they?
What do the police do?
Nothing. It's not their jurisdiction. It's not their remit. Because, I mean, the ASB is concentrated in these areas, and they're sort of, that's the central point where they operate from, but, you know, when people get houses broken into and cars go missing... They retract back to their base, their illegal base. So the police are sort of saying, well, nothing to do with this, Gov, and the CRT are saying, well, we can't afford to do anything. And it's ridiculous.
CRT, Canal something...
Canal and Riverside Trust.
Canal and Riverside Trust. Okay, sorry, who owns the land, the CRT or the local authority? Where would the land be?
The CRT, yeah.
And they have no powers to move these people on?
They're just broke, aren't they? They're a Canal and Riverside Trust, so they're basically a charity, and they say they've got no funds
to
do it.
That's terrible. It sounded idyllic until you started telling us what's happening there, John.
It was, Nick. I mean, it was a lovely... I mean, even in a recession, this place sort of missed all the worst of it, if you know what I mean, and it was almost like a little bubble. And now people are talking about moving out. The whole place
really?
Really is.
Can you give
bad.
Me a rough idea how many of these mobile homes are there? How many people are living there?
Oh, there's got to be close to 20 around and about the area, you know, and they call their mates in the summer when it gets busy. You see German number plates turning up and
good
they sit
God.
On the side of the canal and just abuse people as they go past, you know. And like I say, it's a lovely English sort of rural Warwickshire idyll and it's just completely ruined, really is.
Well, I was just going to say, what do people say, what's it done for the area? I mean, it must just take all the joy and fun out of living in such a picturesque part of the country that's just been stripped out of it.
It sucked all the jam out of me, don't it, Nick?
An expression I've not heard before. John, enjoy this weekend. I sense you probably will. Thank you for that. Terry, you'll be the next caller. I just want to make it plain, of course, there are legal travellers. These are illegal travellers. And we're hearing, aren't we, accidents from Merseyside down through Kent, through Essex, and even through Warwickshire as well. We'll come back to that. I think we're off to Dorset with the next call. It's 9:45, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer has welcomed the agreed 2-week ceasefire between the US and Iran. As part of the deal, commercial ships will be able to pass through the Strait of Hormuz under Iranian supervision. Downing Street says the Prime Minister will travel to meet regional leaders in the Gulf later today for talks aimed at keeping the vital shipping lane open. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain for the northwest. A very warm day otherwise. A high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M1 northbound to Junction 12 at Flitwick. It's following an accident and only one lane's open. Also on the M25, it's busy clockwise at Junction 1A, and that's because a car's broken down on the exit slip road. In Finsbury Park, the Seven Sisters Road remains closed westbound between Stroudgreed Road and Station Place. It's because of the emergency works. In Regent's Park, Primrose Hill Road and Regent's Park Road are both closed because of an ongoing investigation. On the trains, there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Hayes and Harlington and Reading because of the emergency works, and the West Coast Main Line is still suspended between Euston and Milton Keynes for the ongoing engineering works.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Lewis Goodall.
There is a ceasefire for 2 weeks between the US and Iran. Did Trump blink first? And is Iran now in a stronger position than it was before the war?
Lewis Goodall at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Oh, Fiona's back at the monkey safari again. She's hooked on Toyota Service and Aftercare. In fact, it's so good, she'll find any excuse to come back. From replacement wipers to service and MOTs, our perks include free refreshments, quiet workspaces, courtesy cars, and a new warranty with every eligible service. Toyota Service and Aftercare. So good, you'll find any excuse to come back. Eligible services are available until the vehicle turns 10 years old or 100,000 miles. T's and C's apply.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do
is... I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
house.
Weight loss?
I... No, forget that. No, it just happened.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of hemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix kitchen experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Coming to you, Terry, and to John with your story about travellers. We're talking student loans as well. Kevin in Grimsby, why no mention universities are charging up to £800 a month for students to stay in dorms? They should be ashamed. Ray says, I remember being on the grants, not loans marches back in the early 90s, arguing education should remain free. I'm pretty sure the government argument at the time was that the loans were and would remain interest-free. Terry in Kent, my son works in an SEN school and has been paying his student loan for 20 years. Why does the government need to apply any interest if it's a loan from an organisation? And Daisy, I will shorten this a little bit. Daisy Barnforth, I wanted to share my story. I was first in the family to go to uni. From a single-parent working-class background, I went to Sheffield, took full maintenance loan alongside the normal tuition loan. That left me £65,560 debt when I left university. I've paid off £8,211 since in salary payments after getting on a well-paid graduate scheme, and have accrued £2,475 in interest. This feels like a black hole that I cannot get out of. Let's get into the situation regarding travellers. John in Clacton, coming to you in a moment. Terry in Bournemouth. Let's go to Dorset. Is it a problem down in Dorset as well? Good morning.
It can be a problem, Nick. It does happen quite a bit. But I just wanted to start by saying I don't condone this annexing or taking over of land illegally and to go bypassing planning regulations. But if you think about it, it does show something. When there's a will, there's a way. How quickly did these guys and girls build this illegal encampment?
Well, in Kent, over an Easter weekend, and it would appear this happens regularly on Easter weekends up and down the land.
Okay, well, does that not suggest that maybe there's an idea of solving some of our housing issues in this country? Because if a bunch of people can get together and basically make an encampment that quickly, why can't the authorities get together and do some of this for the public good? Even if it's prefabs for a few years, there's so many people out of a home or anywhere to live. I just think it just shows there's such hypocrisy, such a broken system where the councils can't build anything, authorities can't build anything, and yet people just get together. I say, I'm not condoning it, mate.
No,
but
I understand. I mean, you know, of course,
and they make it happen.
They will not pass any building regulations for sanitation.
I get that.
The supply of power is probably pretty dangerous, and maybe even be hacked off the grid. Who knows? I've no idea. But I hear what you say. Here's the other point to the point you're making, Terry, which is we all know loads and loads of people can't afford to get into housing. The cost of housing has continued to increase far greater than our salaries increase. So this is a problem that's only going to get worse. More and more
Absolutely.
People. And if we listen to the story of the riverbank up in Warwickshire, it's just going to get, people are just going to find more areas where they're just going to start taking their caravans.
Well, that makes me wonder another question, actually. Is it necessarily people from travelling communities, or is this some kind of new phenomena? Is it like a people that are going off-grid? Because we do get travellers in and around the Bournemouth area quite a bit, and largely they don't really cause any problems. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. There's a field at the back of where I live. We have travellers once or twice a year. They're not a problem whatsoever. And again, I'm not condoning it,
no,
but I'm just saying it. You mustn't tar everyone with the same brush, you know.
But you just know that there would be council laws and bylaws, and understandably, correctly, there would be electricity checks and gas meter checks, which you know are not going to be taking place in any of these sort of encampments that spring up so quickly. Terry, an interesting point you make. Thank you. John in Clacton. John, now, you were working in an area associated with this, were you? Morning.
I spent 10 years working for a local authority dealing with unauthorised encampments.
Wow. Were you what I would call a bailiff? Is that right?
In my previous life, yes.
You were. I see. So
but
you
I
sought
also
to
worked as directly as someone who dealt with unauthorised encampments. I spent 7 days a week, 10 years doing it.
So you would seek to reclaim the land or property for local authorities?
First of all, Nick, let me just tell you what's happened.
Go on.
It always happens at a bank holiday.
Yes, that's what I'm learning.
Because councils are shut.
Hmm.
They will own that land. Someone will have sold it to them. They would have moved on there Thursday night and tarmacked the whole lot. You've got to be a bit careful because they're not committing any crime. The crime, if there is such a thing, is not having planning permission.
But hang on, I can't suddenly just put asphalt over a field, can I?
Well, you can if you've got the wherewithal to do it, but you
really?
Don't have planning permission. You've got to have planning permission.
What, to put asphalt on a field?
Of course.
Yes.
If you want to build an airport car park.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. So
you've got to have planning, and they don't have planning permission. And to say, well, the police can't do anything because it's civil, for a start, and the councils, when you say they can't do anything, if they grow a corporate pair, they can do what they choose if they've got the wherewithal to do it.
What do they do? John, slow down. You did this. What is the process?
They go to the planning department and go to their enforcement department and make a visit, issue notices, and hoik them off.
When you say hoik them off, how easy is that or otherwise to do?
Well, it can be a piece of cake. I've sometimes done it by myself. or, and I will refer you to a bit of history, Google Marsh Farm in Basildon.
Yes, I was mentioning it. Were you involved in that?
Only on the periphery.
How many people... How many travellers...
Several million.
No, how many travellers were living there? Do we know?
Well, very briefly, to give you a brief history of it, the council, in their wisdom, gave permission for a small site. They built next door. It became a huge site without permission. And so the council could only close half the site because they had different permission for the other half. So what happened at the Battle of Marsh Farm, Google it, they all just moved across the Earth Bund.
This was back in 2011, 400 people living on that illegal site. The eviction of 80 families led to 15 police officers being injured and 45 arrests, the so-called Battle of Dale... Sorry, John?
That was Marsh Farm.
Yes, yes, exactly right.
That cost several millions.
John, how do they lay on the water and the gas or the electric?
They don't.
Well, they have no water?
No, of course not. Not yet.
How do they bathe? Sorry, excuse my utter ignorance. How do they bathe?
Have you seen some of the caravans?
No,
will get, you know, the big 1,000-litre barrel.
Oh, like you can have on a boat. I know what you mean.
The big square...
It has its own water supply, effectively.
It'll have its own water supply. It'll have generators. Until, you know, if they get to stay there a few months, they might plug in somewhere.
And lastly,
to deal with it now.
When you sought to move them on, I want to stress the difference. This is illegal travelling sites we're talking about. I will say that for the third time. This is illegal action, not the legal travellers who we respect. How aggressive could it sometimes get?
Oh, hugely. You know, it depends how you approach it. I used to do it by myself, and I'm no threat to anybody, so it used to work. Or it can be you need a couple of dozen police officers.
Really?
It how you approach it. But can I just say something?
Briefly, if you would.
The word illegal and invasion could be seen as discriminatory to a group who are recognised by the Equalities Act.
Yep, but that's exactly right. And that's what I've been at pains to stress, John. And these are people who, as we think we've witnessed down in Sundridge, I've not been there, but certainly other instances, and the one that you reference at Marsh Farm over in Basildon, those are the instances that we are going to be looking at. John, thanks for all the experience of having worked in that field. It's a story that's not going to go away because the action is still being taken by the local authority down in Kent, and we'll see where that ends. But I'm ending now. If you missed the show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. You can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Lewis Goodall is here for James O'Brien. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thanks very much, Nick. The guns, for now, have fallen silent over Iran. Last night, Donald Trump threatened to wipe out a civilization. This morning, ceasefire. Here's the deal. Iran reopens the Strait of Hormuz. America stops bombing. And more or less for now, that is it. That is the deal. Iran's nuclear program, for now, TBC. Iran's peace terms on the table. Trump's deadline moved again. So all we need to ask ourselves is this. Who needed the Strait in the end open more? Iran or the rest of the world? Did Donald Trump just stop a war? Or did Iran just win one? That is the question that is going to haunt international politics for the next few weeks and possibly for years to come.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Donald Trump says today is a big day for peace after the United States and Iran agreed on a 2-week ceasefire. The US president announced the truce just 90 minutes before his deadline last night to bomb Iranian power plants and bridges. As part of the deal, commercial ships will be able to pass through the Strait of Hormuz under Iranian supervision. Geopolitical adviser Rina Shah has told LBC the truce will be seen as a tactical pause from both sides.
Trump gets to say his maximum pressure approach forced Iran to the table. He gets to say that.
Tehran gets time to push its then 10-point demands on sanctions relief and these security guarantees that they've been demanding without fresh strikes. So it's a moment where both sides are sort of claiming victory.
Keir Starmer has welcomed the ceasefire, saying the UK will do all it can to support and sustain it. The Prime Minister is travelling to the Gulf today for talks on ensuring that the Strait of Hormuz remains open permanently. The visit was planned before the truce was announced. But speaking to LBC this morning, the former Conservative Foreign Secretary James Cleverly accused the Prime Minister of being slow to act.
Day late and a dollar short. So after a ceasefire has been announced, after we've had weeks of criticism, and I've received this from my friends and contacts in the Gulf, about, you know, they feel that we weren't defending our own interests in their country. Keir Starmer has played this badly from the start.
Oil prices have fallen sharply and stock markets in Asia have risen in response to the ceasefire. The price of Brent crude has dropped around 13% and is currently trading at around $92 a barrel. In other news this morning, Bill Gates is to give evidence to the US Congressional Committee looking into the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The Microsoft co-founder is the latest high-profile figure to agree to testify. Gates hasn't been accused of misconduct, and his recent inclusion in the Epstein files does not imply any criminal activity. The evidence session is expected to take place in June. And a British-American woman is due to be sentenced in Los Angeles later in connection with the death of Matthew Perry. Jasveen Sanger faces up to 65 years in prison after admitting supplying the drugs that killed the Friends actor. Perry died of an overdose in 2023. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 243 at 10,591. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for large parts of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain possible in the northwest. A very warm day for England and Wales, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Well, a very good morning to you. Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien all this week on LBC. The time is 10:03, and momentous events once again in the Middle East, ricocheting, cascading across the world. This time yesterday, we were only a few hours away from Donald Trump, the President of the United States, threatening to commit, in effect, genocide against the people of Iran, threatening to wipe out an entire civilization. He said he didn't want it to happen, but that it probably would happen, lest some revolutionarily and important event, his words, sick in brackets, take place to prevent it from happening. Well, by the time we got to yesterday evening, our time, that revolutionarily important event had taken place via the form of intermediation from the state of Pakistan. Now, we have a ceasefire. Yesterday, the threat of genocide. Today, a two-week ceasefire in which Iran has agreed to open the Strait of Hormuz and the guns and bombs and rockets and missiles and artillery have fallen silent across Iran. What are the details of that plan? There's a 10-point plan. The list of 10 points published by Iranian state media include a number of conditions that the US has rejected in the past. The Iranian demands are as follows: the lifting of all primary and secondary sanctions on Iran, continued Iranian control over the Strait of Hormuz, US military withdrawal entirely from the Middle East, an end to attacks on Iran and its allies, the release of frozen Iranian assets, a UN Security Council making any deal binding. For now, the plan allows Iran and Oman to charge a fee of up to $2 million a ship on vessels transiting through the strait. Bear in mind that those straits were free international waterways enduring the status quo ante before this war began on February the 28th. Negotiations began. Remember the context between the Trump administration and Iran over the status of Tehran's nuclear program almost a year ago. They had vastly different demands, and the limits to what each side would concede have proved a barrier to any lasting agreement from day one. And these terms that Iran has put down are harder and more stringent than those being discussed at the time. Israel, for its part, has said they'll abide by the ceasefire, but they won't do so in Lebanon, a secondary front of this war which has not received enough attention. What will happen next? Well, Pakistan's Prime Minister, who helped mediate the ceasefire, said in a post on X that he's invited the Iranian and US delegations to meet in Islamabad on Friday. Tehran has said it will participate in the talks. The White House has said it's considering in-person talks with Iran, but they have not been finalised. There is a very simple question that I'm going to put to you and I want your thoughts on. And we're probably going to end up devoting most of the show to it because the events are so momentous. It is a simple one. Who won this war? Who has won as of now? Of course, it could resume again. But given that there is a ceasefire now and both sides will have a strong interest in preventing the fighting from starting again, who won this war? Did Trump blink, and is Iran in a stronger position today than it was at the start? Were all those bombs and missiles and money and treasure and blood, was it all for nothing from America's point of view? Has Donald Trump committed the most serious mistake of his two terms in office, which could have repercussions for years, if not decades, to come? Who won? 0345-6060973, 0345-6060973. I'm going to give you my take on it, and then you can feel free, of course, as always, to agree or disagree with me. Let's just take it on its own terms, what this war was about. And when I say its own terms, what I mean is what Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu told us it was about. At the start of the war, it's a bit confusing. I mean, this fog of war, I mean, the fog was about, you know, 10 inches thick. But it was a bit confusing because Trump kept changing the goalposts. But at the very start, he said that this was about regime change. And he said that it would require Iranian complete surrender. To take those two metrics, Trump's own litmus test of success, both have not come about. America has failed in its military objectives. There has been no regime change. Yes, the Ayatollah is dead. Yes, he's been replaced by a younger version of himself, quite literally, his own son. Frankly, nature's scythe at the age of 86 was going to swing for the Ayatollah come what may in the next couple of years. Yes, Trump has got rid of him, but there's been no regime change. The Iranian regime is a many-headed hydra and it has survived. It has achieved its principal objective of survival. It concluded correctly that all it needed to do was survive, and its threshold, its barrier, its capacity to absorb pain was greater than the United States, Donald Trump's, and the West. And they were right about that. There was no surrender. There has been no uprising yet. Perhaps it will come, but there has been no popular uprising to topple the regime. Arguably, it's stronger than ever. Let's consider where we were before the war began, the status quo ante. Iran was at its weakest point in the region and globally for years. Its proxies,